I call this meeting to order. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The agenda is approved. Is there a motion to approve the December 8, 2023 and the December 15, 2023 meeting minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The meeting minutes are approved. Good morning, everyone. In my report, well, thank you. We're off to a good start. In my report today, I will highlight recent examples of Spartan excellence. But first, as we enter this February, I want to update you on the planning that many across campus have been engaged in as we mark 1 year since the violence our campus community experienced last February 13. Spartans have been planning and will join together in a day of remembrance. Most classes will not meet that day, and committees of students, faculty, and staff have been planning activities allowing us to come together once more to reflect. We know people continue to process these events in their own way and time, and there are no requirements to participate. We will also offer reflective spaces on campus for those who prefer that alternative as we honor those we lost, those injured, and all affected by this tragedy. I would now like us to join in a moment of silence to remember those we lost and those who were injured. Thank you. The Spartan Strong Fund is now accepting applications to reimburse mental health services used after February 13 by students, faculty, staff, and first responders. 4,200 donors contributed more than $2 million to the fund, and a quarter of that amount is allocated to reimburse out-of-pocket expenses for mental health services to support individual healing. People can apply and find more information on the University Health and Well-Being Spartan Strong Fund webpages. I want to provide our community with an update on the release of the Nassar documents to the Michigan Attorney General's office. MSU's Office of General Counsel has met with the Attorney General Office and have mutually determined that the document transfer process will begin in late February. As outlined in the resolution that the Board of Trustees passed on December 15, 2023, the university is in the process of developing and implementing a comprehensive trauma-informed plan that will support survivors who are impacted by the release of the documents. Part of this plan will include the university hiring an individual to facilitate and coordinate efforts between our campus partners who are instrumental in providing support to our survivor community, which includes our Relationship Violence and Sexual Misconduct Expert Advisory Workgroup, Center for Survivors, our Office of Civil Rights and Title IX Education and Compliance, and others. Let us extend our unwavering compassion to survivors, ensuring they feel deeply supported through this process. Governor Gretchen Whitmer delivered her annual State of the State address last week, and as always, I appreciate her focus on the importance of education to lift Michigan up and support our competitiveness and prosperity. Michigan State, with the nation's top-ranked elementary and secondary education programs, works hand-in-hand with all levels of public education in the state to support students, train our teachers, and assist leaders. We are proud of our collaborations with community colleges, including the Envision Green program, smoothing Lansing Community College students' transition to MSU. And we thank Spartan Super alum and president of LCC, Steve Robinson, for his partnership. MSU is a Research One university, and I want to emphasize the particular importance of MSU's research to the state's manufacturing and innovation economy and its global competitiveness. MSU is a dedicated partner in the state's 21st century workforce development, and we look forward to the day when we can break ground for our planned Engineering and Digital Innovation Center. EDIC is part of our mission to improve the competitiveness of our graduates and the state of Michigan in areas where digital and physical technologies converge, including computer science, material science and engineering, data science, cybersecurity, mobility, game development, information science, artificial intelligence, and machine learning. Those topics may seem quite ordinary, but they become extraordinary when you add disciplines of the humanities, arts, social science, business, and health. Spartans have always worked to prepare our graduates for the expected and the unexpected. So when we introduce the humanities into AI, and the arts into mobility and health, and business into machine learning, we create the teaching and learning environment that will shape humanity's future. It will be exciting to realize this vision at MSU for our students, for the state, and the world. We are grateful for the state's $30 million investment in EDICT in fiscal year 2024 state budget. And we will continue to advocate for additional public and private support for this estimated $300 million instructional research and developmental facility. Mental health is also an area of concern to Michigan communities, and I'm looking forward to today's research presentation by Dr. Jennifer Johnson. Dr. Johnson is the C.S. Mott Endowed Professor of Public Health in the College of Human Medicine, and we'll talk about her work with the National Center for Health and Justice Integration for Suicide Prevention. The Department of Public Health and its researchers are embedded in Flint, where they work side by side with local partners and stakeholders to understand health conditions and support the community's needs through initiatives like this. It was in Flint last month that Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha, Governor Whitmer, and other program partners and local moms and babies helped to launch the RX Kids program. This program, which is funded by partners including the State of Michigan and the C.S. Mott Foundation, supports expectant moms and their babies through a novel program of prenatal cash payments and additional financial support in the first year of life. Babies born this year through the RX program will be eligible for our 2040-2041 entering class, and I look forward to my future self welcoming them to our ivy-covered halls and to Dr. Mona being on hand to shake their hands at graduation. Engagement in our communities, from voting in elections to volunteer service, is an important part of the Spartan experience. That is why the President's Office co-sponsors the annual Volunteer Service Recognition Awards with the MSU Center of Community Engaged Learning. Each year, we celebrate those students who earned this recognition by who completed at least 100 hours of volunteer community service. Last month, we saluted a record 130 students earning volunteer service awards. Michigan State students in total last year recorded 23,900 community engaged learning registrations. That came as MSU claimed the number one spot for service learning among all public four-year institutions in U.S. News and World Report's 2024 Best Colleges Rankings. Congratulations and thanks to all the Spartans working to support our neighbors and communities. I now want to congratulate another Spartan on an amazing career milestone. Hats off to men's basketball head coach Tom Izzo on his 700th career win, which came this week against Michigan. Coach Izzo, a Hall of Fame member who also coached his 500th Big Ten Conference regular season game 2 weeks ago, is in his 29th year leading the Spartans men's basketball program. Tom is a leader both on and off the court, and I thank him for his care of our community and congratulate him on his 700th win. I also want to give a shout out to former Spartan head football coach Mark D'Antonio. Coach D'Antonio was recently elected to the College Football Hall of Fame, and in his 13 years with us, Coach D'Antonio compiled a 114-57 record. Congratulations to him. And it was bittersweet this week when we announced that Vice President and Chief Security Officer Marlon Lynch will leave MSU for the University of Colorado Boulder, where he will take the post of Associate Vice Chancellor in their new Division of Public Safety. Marlon joined Michigan State in February 2021 and has expanded our safety and security work beyond traditional law enforcement. He has done a tremendous job, and on behalf of his alma mater, we give him our appreciation. His last day will be March 3rd. I'm pleased to share that Doug Monette will serve as Vice President and Chief Safety Officer beginning March 4th, ensuring a smooth transition and maintaining the high level of performance of DPPS. I've talked with President-elect Guskowitz, and he shares with me the confidence in Doug based on his 20 years of service to our MSU community and his prior distinguished service as interim chief. We have full confidence in his leadership, and I know the MSU community will welcome him to this role. Now I want to thank and congratulate the winners of this year's Excellence in Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Awards, who will be announced at the awards program next week. These awards represent the values and ideals of the university in the areas of diversity, equity, and inclusion. I want to thank Dr. Jabbar Bennett and the Office of Institutional Diversity and Inclusion for sponsoring these all-university honors. In February, Michigan State joins the nation in celebrating Black History Month with events including the 24th Annual Dr. William G. Anderson Lecture Series, Slavery to Freedom, and American Odyssey. I encourage everyone to attend these and other activities as we learn, grow, and celebrate the accomplishments of Black Spartans. I want to conclude my final report to the university with my thanks to the board for the opportunity to serve MSU during the past 16 months as interim president and the prior 2 years as provost. It's been a privilege to serve MSU with you and with our exemplary senior leadership team. And I want to again welcome Kevin Guskowitz as the 22nd president of MSU starting next month. I am confident he will lead the university to ever upward levels of accomplishment and success. I'm firmly convinced that the future of Michigan State is bright as long as we continue to learn from and lean on each other, lift each other up, and know that when we do these things, we can lead the world as only Spartans can. And with that, I offer to you my heartiest Go Green!
Go White!
I now call upon the Board Secretary, Stephen Fletcher, to invite public participation on items germane to the agenda.
There are no such items this morning, Interim President Woodruff.
Thank you. I now call upon the Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, to present the gift, grant, and contract report.
Good morning. Chairperson Vassar, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is November 14, 2023 through January 5, 2024. The total value of this period is
$93,061,631. Is there a motion to approve the gift, grants, and contract report?
Uh-huh.
Is there a second?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The gift, grants, and contract report is approved. I now call upon the Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, to introduce the research presentation.
Thank you. Dr. Jennifer Johnson is our speaker today. As the President indicated, she is a C.S. Mott Endowed Professor of Public Health and Professor of OBGYN in the College of Human Medicine. She actually was our first research hire in Flint, and she came to MSU from Brown University in 2015 to begin the division, now Department of Public Health in Flint. Her education began at Brigham Young University as an undergraduate in applied physics. She remained at Brigham Young and went on to earn her PhD in clinical psychology. She then completed her residency at the Veterans Affairs Palo Alto Healthcare System and later moved to Brown University, where she completed postdoctoral fellowship and was on the faculty for 10 years. She's a licensed clinical psychologist, and she is really a leading national researcher in mental health and maternal health treatments and implementation scientists. She serves as the Chief Translation Officer for MSU's Office of Health Sciences, helping to guide the realization of the university's sustainable health strategic goals and to ensure uptake of research findings into practice and policy. Dr. Johnson has been the principal investigator of 18 NIH-funded research studies, worth bringing in more than $72 million, including her current two NIH center grants, the Maternal Health Multilevel Intervention for Racial Equity Center at almost $19 million, and that's a partnership with Henry Ford investigators, and the National Center for Health and Justice Integration for Suicide Prevention in Incarcerated Populations. And again, that's a $15 million grant, again, with Henry Ford partners. and you'll be hearing more about those today. Now, she doesn't stop there. She has five individual NIH grants to go along with that. I'm not sure when she sleeps. She is credited with the first large grant award received through the Henry Ford Partnership, the one I mentioned. And on a national level, she is the highest funded NIH researcher in any OBGYN department across the country. So her leadership at MSU includes serving on the MSU Strategic Planning Committee, participation in the Academic Fellows Program, and while also leading in her field through roles in national scientific boards, numerous NIH review committees, and prestigious editorial boards. Please welcome Dr. Jennifer Johnson.
Thank you so much for having me. If I can make the slides work. Okay. Suicide is a top 10 cause of death for people under age 65 in the United States. And there are effective interventions to prevent suicide. But the biggest problem in suicide prevention is how do we get these effective interventions to the people who need them at the moment they need them, especially those who aren't well connected with healthcare. So we do know some things about suicide risk factors, but these tell us more about who's at risk than when they're at risk. But let me tell you a story of someone we worked with. This man had been trying to rebuild his life. One day something went wrong and he lost his job and with it his hope for the future. He went home, his anxiety started to increase, and he started drinking. As he got more intoxicated, he started having suicidal thoughts, and he decided to end his life by crashing his car on the highway, making it appear an accident. But as he drove, he got pulled over by law enforcement. The police didn't realize that they were encountering someone in an active suicide attempt, and instead of being taken to the hospital, he was arrested and taken to jail. The criminal legal or criminal justice system in the U.S. is vast and wide and complicated and encompasses everything up on that slide. What a lot of people don't realize, I think, is that on any given day, most people who are criminal legal involved are actually in the community, even those who had previously been arrested. They're in the community, not in custody. Furthermore, jail is different from prison. People are usually in jail for only a few days. They often aren't convicted, and they may not even be charged. But part of what our research has found is that the fact of that criminal legal contact, that contact with the criminal legal system, like contact with the police or spending a night in jail, marks suicide risk in the community. Because if you're ever going to be arrested, it's usually at a moment when your life is spinning out of control, like the story I just told. And those interacting with criminal legal systems are especially likely to not be well connected to healthcare. So take a minute just to yourself silently and guess what percent of adults who die by suicide in the U.S. spend at least one night in jail in the past year. Just guess. So our research has shown that 21% or more than one in five adults who die by suicide in the U.S. each year have spent at least one night in jail in the past year. Therefore, this research has actually found an answer to the biggest problem in suicide prevention, which is how do you find people at risk when they're at risk, and especially those who aren't already well connected to healthcare systems. Our research has also identified evidence-based suicide prevention interventions for the 10 million admissions and discharges from jail each year. So that answers one big problem for suicide prevention. Unfortunately, there's a second big problem, as there often is. So the second big problem has plagued work with people returning to the community after jail, and again, typically brief, only a few days. But this problem has plagued us for 40 or 50 years. So the 3,000 jails across the U.S. are city or local. They're independent of each other, and they just will never have the capacity to link people back to the community services that they need. And this is logistical. There's 10 million admissions, discharges a year. Like I said, typically only a few days. Discharges are unplanned, unscheduled. Two-thirds of the people going through have mental health problems. Two-thirds to three-quarters have addiction problems. The jails just aren't staffed to do it. It would be hard for anyone. And then on the healthcare side, the healthcare providers don't know their person was in jail. and say you're gone to jail for a week, you miss your appointment, some of these systems will drop people from care for missing appointments. So then you might think, okay, well, maybe we can link all these systems electronically to let the health systems know their person has been in trouble. But it turns out, like I said up here on the slide, you know, there's 3,000 county and local jails, 18,000 police departments, all these community health centers. All the data is in different formats. It's just not possible to electronically link all these systems, and the jails typically don't have good IT systems anyway. But as part of this work, I had a conversation with CareSource Managed Care Organization in Ohio. And I'm not sure if you know, but it turns out that arrest and release data out of jail are public, and health data is private. And it turns out that technology has advanced to the point that it's possible to scan this publicly available arrest and release data to matches to a healthcare system. So CareSource had realized that and was matching release data from the 108 Ohio jails against their own subscriber list each week. And making the connection this way is amazing. I was so excited when I realized someone was doing this, because it doesn't require this release data to be in any particular format, doesn't require direct coordination with the jails, it protects the privacy of the health information, and it means that we have a scalable way to let local health systems know that one of their patients was just released from jail and maybe in crisis, and they might want to reach out and check up on the person. And like I said, this is a problem that's plagued us across health conditions for decades, addiction, mental health, infectious disease. So we put all these ideas and past work together, that contact with the criminal legal system marks a high-risk time for suicide in the community, that we have discovered effective suicide prevention approaches, and that we now have a way to let the health systems know to reach out, solving these two huge problems simultaneously. So I got together with my colleague Brian Amadani at Henry Ford Health and my colleague Lauren Weinstock at Brown University, and we submitted a grant to the National Institutes of Health and were awarded a $15.5 million grant from them to create the National Center for Health and Justice Integration for Suicide Prevention. And what this center is, it's a set of 8 related research projects that demonstrate and test suicide prevention approaches based on these ideas. And one of the most important things about this is everything we're testing is pragmatic and scalable. So among these 8 studies are the 2 largest randomized suicide prevention trials ever. One randomizes 60,000 people and another randomizes 43,000 people. But the center is not only conducting important clinical research that saves lives, it's providing research training for junior faculty, postdocs, and students. We're providing training in suicide prevention best practices for health systems and criminal legal systems across the country. And this was, I believe, the first or one of the first major partnership grants of the MSU Henry Ford Partnership. This shows our first 4 projects. What's important here is less the details, but more to notice just that the projects take place across the country after police contacts, jail contacts, courts. And again, you know, they're large and pragmatic, and what we're trying to show is how to get services to people who need them in a scalable way in the real world. So not surprisingly, this is a huge effort. We are collaborating with more than 15 different health system and university partners. And I'm especially excited about our long list of practice policy and lived experience partners. These are just a few up here on the right. But they include organizations of people with lived experience of suicide attempts, lived experience of criminal legal contact, prosecutors, sheriffs, judges, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, the American Jail Association. Just a really fantastic group of partners that the center is bringing together to work across silos to try to prevent suicide for some of our nation's most vulnerable. So in conclusion, we have evidence-based suicide interventions in the community, and what this center does is demonstrate and test new ways to identify some of the folks most at risk in the community and connect them to these effective interventions to prevent suicide. Thank you.
Dr. Johnson, thank you so much for this exemplary work of public-private partnership between the university and all the partners that you've brought together. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
I just have a comment. This is important work, in my opinion. It's revolutionary work. But Dr. Gage, you never disappoint. You always surprise me. So, and congratulations on all your grant work. That's a big deal. And I don't know how you're sleeping either. That's a lot. What I wanted to comment on is the way that you presented your data and your study. Your language was so careful. I pay attention to words a lot. And you didn't have any pathologizing. You didn't use carceral language. You didn't have any criminalization that you had ascribed to the participants in your study, the people that you are trying to care for. And it to me, the humanizing way that you spoke about the people that you're studying is a testament to your work, but also to the humanity that you're bringing through your research. And I just appreciate that.
Thank you so much. You know, one of the things I find the hardest in this work is as soon as you say jail, people have 1,000 assumptions.
Yeah.
And as soon as you say suicide, people have 1,000 assumptions.
Yeah.
And so I've really worked with some of the wonderful MSU communication people to try to help people understand what this really is, because there's just a lot of assumptions in this. So thank you.
And you talked about people and folks and humans, right, and citizens and community members. This is your study, not the other ways that you can characterize them. And just that careful language is so important to me. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Yeah, if I could comment, there's an aphorism that goes like this. I always wondered when someone was going to do something about that, and then I realized I was someone. And I've never met a person like you who, no matter the difficulty of the challenge, says, it's hurting people, and I've got to figure it out. And you could give a similar presentation of how you identified something that caused people to struggle, and talk about how you analyzed it and how you could help. And so I just want to say just how fortunate we are at Michigan State to have you, and really the way that your life every day echoes to make other people's lives better. So thank you.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate that. I really thought, you know, it's hard. This is such a public setting. We have 6 to 8 minutes. I thought, should I talk about my work with moms or something easier? But no, I really wanted you to understand this.
Yeah.
So thank you for the opportunity to talk about it, even though it's tough.
Thank you.
Very much.
I now call upon Interim Provost Yaitsko to present the personnel actions and information reports.
Trustees, I present for approval the items on the February 2, 2024 list of personnel actions. I present for approval the following tenured faculty appointment: Hao Zhong, PhD, Professor, Department of Statistics and Probability, with tenure, effective May 16, 2024. I present for approval the following personnel actions. It is recommended that the Chair of the Board of Trustees is hereby authorized to execute such documents and agreements as may be necessary regarding Interim President Teresa K. Woodruff's return to the faculty in the Departments of Obstetrics, Genealogy, and Reproductive Biology, and Biomedical Engineering. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions.
Thank you, Provost Yaitsko. Is there a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The personnel actions are approved.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now move to the committee reports and other items requiring board approval. Trustee Vassar.
I would like to congratulate Trustee Pierce on her overwhelmingly successful career in banking. She has closed a chapter and began another one. And as I had personally hoped for last year when she was appointed to the board, I've asked Trustee Pierce to use her expertise as chair of the Budget and Finance Committee. I am so happy, since I majored in English, to hand this over to her, because she has innovation, experience, insight, and she is an expert in this field. And so thank you so much for taking on this role, and I will turn it over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair Vassar. Chair Vassar stays on the Budget and Finance Committee, so I appreciate that. I also appreciate Trustee Naki Jefferson and Trustee Tebe for being on the Budget and Finance Committee and staying on it. Thank you. So today, we, as chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to enter into long-term leases for the properties located at 4660 Hagedorn Road and 4700 Hagedorn Road upon such terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the president or the president's designee.
Thank you. Is there's a motion to approve the long-term leases of 4660 and 4700 Hagedorn Roads. Is there a second?
Support.
And then, thank you. And Norm Beauchamp is available to discuss if anyone has any questions or if you'd like to say a few words.
Yeah, thank you. I'll just comment that, you know, MSU's commitment is to provide patient and family-centered care and to have an environment where that can be done in a wonderful way that supports faculty and staff and all the patients seeking care. And so in partnership with the Eyed Family, Michigan State University worked to create a facility where that could be done, and I'm really appreciative for your support in making this all possible.
Thank you. There's properly made motion and support. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries. Trustee Pierce?
Thank you. Okay, so next on the agenda is I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project entitled Packaging Addition Number 3.
Very good. There's a motion to authorize to plan the Packaging Addition 3. Is there support?
Support.
Okay, and then we have Dean Millibaugh available to discuss. Where is Dean Millibaugh? I see her.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to be with all of you. Not that long ago, many of you were actually with us at the ribbon cutting associated with the previous phase, where we were able to make additions to the School of Packaging with regard to graduate student spaces, teaching spaces, and other areas where our students can gather. You all are also aware that the School of Packaging is the number one school of packaging in the nation, and that we are the only school that provides a PhD in packaging. This phase of our growth is dedicated to advancing our research enterprise. The goal of the phase is to essentially expand the building to allow us to create additional research laboratories for our faculty. And I do want to make a note that the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources has also made a commitment to increasing the number of tenure system faculty within the School of Packaging to also help then fill those spaces with top-notch researchers who will advance the work of packaging not only for Michigan, the nation, but also for the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What I wanted to mention is I found out as we were going through that proposal that 40% of all packaging engineers in this country are graduates of Michigan State University. That's incredible. Congratulations. Okay, next I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project entitled the Campbell Hall Renewal.
Very good. There's a motion to authorize to proceed the Campbell Hall Renewal. Is there a second?
Support.
Any discussion?
Okay, Dean Long and Vennie Gore will say a few words about this exciting project.
So Campbell Hall is located at the historic entrance of the campus. It was built in 1939 with WPA money, which put men and women to work during the Great Depression. And the original contractor was Chrisman, and the contract to do the renovation will be Chrisman again. And so when
not
we...
Not the same people.
Not the same people. Their grandchildren. Yes. Their grandchildren. So when we redid Mayo Hall, we had some of the original trades come and opened that back in 2008. We... 55% of our residential community is part of our living learning communities. So I want to introduce Dr. Chris Long as he could talk about the honors program.
Well, thank you, Vennie. It is a great privilege to partner with Vennie on this project. As he mentioned, Campbell Hall lies at the crossroads between the campus, the city of East Lansing and the capital of the state of Michigan. And it is a perfect location for us to establish a living learning environment for our honor students, for the very best students we attract to this university, to learn how to do transdisciplinary research, the very kind of research that Dr. Johnson was talking about just now. This will be a signature opportunity for us to recruit and retain the very best students from around the globe. And I am looking forward to working with Vinnie and with admissions and with our colleagues across the university to establish that space as a gathering place for our faculty and for our students to elevate the reputation of this university as we work to establish the Honors College as the leading Honors College for undergraduate research in the world. Thank you.
Exciting. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries.
Okay, and the committee also received from our Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, Lisa Fraze, the budget outlook for fiscal year 25. Her and her team are doing an incredible amount of work to get the budget ready for approval. We'll see that in June. And then also we saw Vinnie Gore gave us a look, an update on student life and engagement. And so he and his team are doing a lot of work on that as well. And so we'll see more about that at the next meeting as well. That's all I have.
Thank you very much, Trustee Pierce. Trustee Kelly will now present the Committee on Academic Affairs report on behalf of Trustee Deno.
Right, thank you. As a member of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board hereby approve the revisions to the Board of Trustees Policy 612, Building and Facilities Naming, as outlined in the packet.
Very good. There's a motion to amend the BOT 612 naming policy. Any support?
Support.
Any discussion? Very good. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries.
The committee also heard updates on accreditation, FASA, clinical integration, and the Henry Ford Health System Research Building.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I now call upon Trustee Dan Kelly to present the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance report.
Thank you. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move the board hereby reappoint Plant Moran as the university's external auditors for the 2023-24 fiscal year at a fee of $411,750 in accordance with the Board of Trustees Policy 104, Auditor Rotation.
Very good. There's a motion to reappoint the external auditors. Is there a second?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries.
Thank you. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move the board hereby approve the following: a licensing agreement with Earth Metric Innovations and the lease amendment to Jolt Energy Storage Technologies.
There's a motion to approve the contract terms. Is there support?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries.
The committee also received updates on information security and the Office of Civil Rights Case Management Systems. And that concludes my report.
Very good. Thank you, Trustee Kelly. Trustee Kelly Tebe will now present the Committee on Student Life and Culture report.
Thank you. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Student Life and Culture, I move that the board hereby approves the proposed revisions to the Student Rights and Responsibilities and General Student Regulations documents as outlined in Attachment A.
Very good. There's a motion to revise the Student Rights and Responsibilities and General Student Regulations. Is there support?
Support.
Any discussion?
VP Core, is there anything you'd like to add to it?
Thank you, Trustee Tebe. I'd first like to recognize four important people who did a lot of the work on this. First is Marilyn Turant and our late Kathy Wilbur. They led the off-campus conduct task force that was commissioned back in 2020. And so that led to where we are today. And I'd also like to recognize Dean Alan Shaw and Dr. Mackenzie Fretz, who worked diligently on this. So the Students' Rights and Responsibilities was first written back in the 70s. It has not seen a major revision since then. And as you know, the world has changed. And so what this does, it brings it into today's context. where we are now, it brings in electronic communication and our jurisdiction in various different places. The most important thing, too, is making the document much more readable for students. It's much more of a legal document now. It's written in a plain format. So, and then also putting in some other protections that will allow us to hold those who violate our conduct code accountable. So, it's been a long road to get here. We appreciate the work of ASMSU, COGS, the University Committee on Student Life and Engagement, and University Council for their diligence and review. And then we did have a number of advisory committees made up of students, faculty, and staff. So this has been a collaborative work document over the last 18 months.
Very good. There's a properly made motion that has been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries.
Thank you. The Student Life and Culture Committee discussed high-impact learning experiences at MSU. High-impact practices, or HIPs, are teaching and learning practices that provide significant educational benefits for students, such as first-year seminars, undergraduate research, internships, writing-intensive courses, service learning, and capstone courses. Research demonstrates that students who engage in one or more HIPs during their undergraduate career earn higher GPAs, exhibit higher retention rates, develop an increased sense of belonging, and become more deeply engaged in their education. MSU offers a wide range of HIPs. For example, the Senior Design Class in the College of Engineering and the Senior Art Show in the College of Arts and Letters are examples of capstone learning HIPs, and the university's 300-plus education abroad programs and the first-year seminars abroad represent examples of global learning in HIPs. MSU has over 4,000 students working with faculty in research-oriented HIPs, while over 20,000 students annually participate in service and community-based learning experiences. Finally, MSU offers several HIPs in the form of learning communities, such as the Dow STEM Scholars, Drew Scholars, and Detroit MAIDS, which bring together a community of students around a common broad topic or goal. The committee had the fortunate opportunity to talk to four students about their experiences with high-impact learning opportunities. Jayla Granger, a senior zoology major from Detroit, discussed the impact of the Dow STEM program and her internship at the Potter Park Zoo. Sam Frank, a second-year biomedical and nutritional science major from West Bloomfield, shared his first-year seminar in Iceland, and then he went on to do study abroads in both Spain and what was the other country? Can't even remember.
I remember Spain.
Yeah, Spain. At least Spain, for sure. Might have been Italy, I think. And then Joey Esperanza, a third-year microbiology major from Holland, Michigan, talked about his experience as an undergraduate learning assistant for biology classes, as well as his research on immunology and autoimmune infertility in Dr. Margaret Petroff's laboratory. And he had wonderful things to say about Dr. Petroff and the lab that she has. Finally, Mariana Flores, a third-year supply chain management major from Monterrey, Mexico, spoke with us as she is here today to share her work with the Community Engagement Scholars Program and the Spartan Consultant Academy. Mariana.
Hi, everyone. First of all, thank you so much for having me here. I'm really excited to just be able to share a little bit of what I've been involved in my high-impact practices here at MSU. So I was already kind of introduced. My hometown is Monterrey, Mexico, so I am an international student, and I do feel like that has impacted the way that I've grown and really just become a part of the MSU community during my time here. So the high-impact practices that I want to discuss they're very varied in the sense that I really do believe that I've had the opportunity to engage not just in professionally fulfilling experiences, but also a lot of personal growth. And they include, for instance, the Career Services Network, which I first joined as a freshman, which sounds a little bit funny, a freshman giving career advice to upperclassmen, but it was just such an incredible opportunity where I've gained a lot of abilities like interpersonal relationships and how to communicate with people that might be in a situation of distress. And that eventually led me to pursue career and professional goals in the area of consulting. where I've been in Spectrum Consulting Group. It's a very prominent student org in the Broad College of Business, and I've gained so much out of it, including, of course, collaboration, working with a team, and being the face of an organization that has worked with actual clients all over Michigan. From there, I decided to join fellow students, not just in Broad, but around the university, and we are founding the first Spartan Consulting Academy, which is basically an organization dedicated to providing fellow MSU students with resources, coaching, and connections and networking in order to break into the highly competitive consulting industry. And that has been incredible. It has been challenging, but also amazingly rewarding. And finally, what I want to focus on the most is the Community Engagement Scholars Program, which is hosted by the Center for Community Engaged Learning, and I've been a part of that since my freshman year. I keep coming back, and I've had the chance to partner with several nonprofit organizations here in Michigan, including the Refugee Development Center, Capital Area United Way, and many other organizations. The reason that I'm so passionate about this program specifically is because I feel like I really have been able to find the balance between professional and personal growth. It really consists of taking the necessary steps to make a community a better place and therefore increasing community engagement. I've really learned so much from it, so much from being able to interact with people of many different backgrounds, and it has really pushed me to know what I want to pursue full time. Like, when I graduate, keep giving back to the MSU community, to the Michigan community, and I was just really, really grateful for those kinds of opportunities, really excited to keep being a part of them, and I just really find a lot of value in that. So I really hope that fellow MSU students can keep increasing community engagement in such high practice activities.
Thank you
very much. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Mariana. We're very excited to see what you do after you graduate Michigan State over the next, well, you got a year left. But the university continues to find ways to promote and expand the high-impact experiences it offers our undergraduate students. And this concludes my report.
Very fine. Thank you very much. I now call upon Board Secretary Stephen Fletcher to invite public participation on other items.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff. We'll now proceed to the public participation on other items portion of the meeting. Each individual who's signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. Given the number of speakers today, we ask that you do not exceed your allotted time. Know that persons scheduled to speak may not cede all or part of their time to other individuals or read statements on behalf of others. We'll now hear from Lucius Vassar, followed by Tracy Jefferson. Lucius, are you with us? Okay. We will hear from Tracy Jefferson. Tracy, are you with us?
Good morning. Good morning, Chair Vassar and MSU Board of Trustees and guests. Black women leaders are under attack nationally, especially in universities and colleges, and they are dying professionally and physically. I called Dr. Rima after I read about Dr. Bonnie Candia Bailey taking her own life after being bullied by the president at her college. I was outraged by her mistreatment and disturbed by the word bully. I have been upset about that word since Dr. Rima was salaciously called a bully. Institutional bullying, the kind that Dr. Candia Bailey was subjected to, is defined as persistent hostility directed at someone by one or more persons with the intent to intimidate, undermine, or humiliate. After reviewing what Dr. Rima has endured here at MSU, it is clear to me that she is the one who is being bullied. Again, I know Dr. Rima asks tough questions, holds herself and others to high standards, and will speak up when she sees what is wrong or can be improved. That is not bullying. It's her responsibility. That's what the state of Michigan elected her to do. Accountability is not bullying. It seems you do not want to be held accountable. Again, I know Dr. Rima is collegial, gracious, forgiving, and encouraging, even in her demand for continuous improvement and excellence. The demand for excellence she has for herself alone can be intimidating for those content to be mediocre. She's not intimidating. You're intimidating. This is a difference. There is a difference. Try striving for greatness instead of bullying her out of fear. When I talk to Dr. Rima, she is most disturbed with this bullying charge. She pointed out to me that bullies are cowards and she is not afraid. She wasn't raised to shrink from challenges. I have never seen her cower. Countless people have noticed her strength and admired her courage in the face of vicious attacks on her integrity and character. A lesser leader would have quit. She's brave. Some of you are not. In your cowardice, you have turned to bullying her. Be clear. You will not make Dr. Rima a martyr for MSU. She's going to live out her assignment, her purpose, and her passion for education, and leave here on her terms, in peace, not in pieces. Dr. Rima and I know the people in this room and throughout the state who have lied about her, schemed to publicly and privately defame her, and professionally ruin her, though we have not named them yet. Stop attacking her. You have jobs you are either paid or elected to do. Do that with excellence instead of bullying her. We all see it. We see you. And we will not allow you to break her soul. People across the nation are watching and paying attention to what is happening to black women leaders. MSU, with all that you have gone through, do not need to add the self-inflicted wound that will surely come if you continue to harass Dr. Rima. You will be accountable. Leave her alone, do your job, and let her do hers. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. Our next speaker will be Steve Patterson, followed by Saba Syed. Steve, are you with us?
I'm sorry, I can just barely hear you. Did you say Steve Patterson?
That is correct. Good morning, Steve.
Happy Groundhog Day. I saw my chair. I was glad of it. Good morning, Steve Patterson, Richland Township, State of Michigan. I was here in October, and you were in such turmoil, I don't think you heard my message. I sent you packets, made a special trip up here to drop off packets. I don't think you even looked at them. Maybe a couple of you did. There's a couple of you that I can tell you got it going on. And then, you know, I'm sorry, I'm going to talk truth with you. I'm here to talk about the Kellogg Forest again. It's an important place. It's in Kalamazoo County, and it was closed because of COVID. The parking lots were closed. People go there and they walk because it's so darn beautiful. W.K. Kellogg set it up for people to enjoy. You conduct experiments there, and you have a full-time caretaker, a forest manager there. And when he came on board, COVID came along, so it was shut down. After COVID was, it's not cured, but after it got better, it was kept closed. And there were various excuses given. One was, the integrity of the science. Well, we all knew that wasn't true because you could still go back there and walk. I sent you a petition. There's over a thousand people saying exactly what I'm telling you here today, that these excuses, scientific integrity, vandalism, and today I finally, one of you had somebody call me. He called me in November, and he said, I'll get back in touch with you. I never heard from him, and this is classic. You don't respond. I'm here because to try to deal with you in writing or over the phone is a futile and stupid effort. Waste of time. You sicked the sheriff on me and said I was trespassing because I sent you photographs. That was cruel. We're in the John Hanna building. He was president for 28 years. You've gone through six presidents in 6 years. Good leaders acknowledge a problem. They address it. They take care of business. If there's victims, they take care of the victims. That's not happening here. You've lost your way. You lack integrity internationally. I'm a Michigander. You've shamed us all internationally. I'm talking truth to you, and you need to hear it. I won't even get into the poor situation with the women here at Michigan State. It's shameful. It makes me sick as a parent of two daughters. I'm sickened by it. I'd like you to do the right thing. Mr. Hanna did the right thing. He took the high road. He did the right thing. This is a small thing. Reopen the Kellogg Forest parking lot. Quit making people park half mile down the road in the mud. Your excuses are ludicrous. They don't add up. Have a nice day. Change your ways. Don't be the same old MSU. Happy Groundhog Day.
Steve, thank you. Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Saba Saeed, followed by Garrett Sumner. Saba, are you with us?
Good morning, everybody. Hi, I'm here again, unfortunately. I just wanted to second kind of what Mr. Steve Patterson said. And then also I had a question. Is a presentation, is that what it's going to take with the statistics and numbers of how many Palestinians have died in the past 3 months to get some sympathy around here? Because I'm happy to do it. But as I stand before here before you again for the third time, I look back and reflect on my past statements to you. Within each passing period of time, I watch my statements become less and less emotional. I have no tears left. My first speech, the death count was about 10,000. Then by my second, 20,000. And by my third, now, over 30,000. With the numbers increasing daily, I think about how that is one less person who shares my blood, my culture, my history. Half of those being children, meaning that's one less person who can learn my culture and history, and pass it on. I observe what's happening on campus as well, and I am saddened to see that the indigenous students still fighting for a land acknowledgement from this university. What's worse about it is that we all acknowledge the genocide that this land has been built on as well. I also reflect about us being the first university to completely divest from apartheid South Africa. It confuses me because it seems as if we acknowledge the atrocities, but we never do anything about it unless it's too late. The irony of standing in the in front of the Board of Trustees when no one really says you're a source of trust, that can be easily proven by the dozens of no-confidence statements and resolutions as well. To divest from apartheid once means you must continue to divest from apartheid, especially in times like this when South Africa has taken the State of Israel to the International Court of Justice. Note the word justice in there. As they hold no real power to enforce it, meaning their rulings are not binding, there are no real consequences to their ruling. So it forces them to look at the facts and the facts only to determine their ruling as you up here volunteer in this position. You get no monetary benefits in this role, which one would think would allow you to focus on the university issues, not personal campaigns or other people's campaigns, to logically and critically make decisions with years of experience as well to back up your answers. I have little years of experience and do not hold any of your degrees. However, I do know that a university with a history of controversy, good and bad, would not want to be tied with any one thing or country that has been accused of genocide, especially when that country accusing it was the one we supported and we stood in solidarity with as we watched them free themselves from apartheid. But what do I know? I'm just a naive 21-year-old. But I'm okay with being naive as long as I do not live as a hypocrite, as long as I do not disappoint those who trusted me to make the decisions on what's good for them and those who trusted me with my moral compass. And one last thing, sorry. Now that I understand how this power structure kind of works in this university, I just want to thank Interim President Woodruff for taking the time to meet with us many, many times and hear our concerns, and I'm sad to see her go. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker. Thank you. Our next speaker is Garrett Sumner, followed by Nicole Buchanan. Garrett, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Garrett Sumner, and I'm the conservation librarian next door at the MSU Libraries. I want to start off by thanking this body for its resolution of neutrality and voluntary recognition that it passed back in December of 2021, which states that if a group of employees wishes to form a union, or join a bargaining unit or union, the union representing them may present a proposed bargaining unit to the university, and that the university will accept the bargaining unit proposed by the union as long as that unit is reasonable. It is through this process of voluntary recognition, the policy that this very board adopted and promoted, that this union was organized. It was through this policy, which took us hundreds of conversations, hundreds of hours that we've had with our colleagues, this democratic grassroots process that it took us of talking to each and every single one of our supporters in person, often multiple times in a row, and before they would finally join us. But today, as of February 2nd, our bargaining unit is yet to be recognized, although I hope and trust that this will soon be corrected. It has been suggested that librarians, despite our faculty status, should not be a part of this bargaining unit. This, despite the fact that an overwhelming majority of librarians has already signed their union authorization cards. Dozens of librarians made decisions themselves to form a union. I've been part of this organizing drive for almost 2 years now, and of all these countless conversations I've personally had with my librarian coworkers, not a single one of them was satisfied with the status quo. Not a single one of them thought that change, meaningful change, was possible until we collectively organized. It was not a single one of them, of my dozens of colleagues that I've spoken with, that was opposed to a union. It was just this week that I was speaking with a very well-respected coworker of mine, who's had many, many years of impressive service here at MSU, who said that, hands down, 2023 was her most difficult year here. And she emphasized to me not just the necessity of having this faculty union, but the absolute urgency of it. It may be a cliche that we hear that a library is always referred to as the heart or the soul or the center of the university, but there's a reason for that. Librarians directly support the research and teaching missions of MSU. We're the ones at the forefront of the transition in higher education from traditional media to new media. We are the ones who deliver subject-specific expertise. We are the ones who connect researchers and their questions to resources and answers. We work with instructors and students to navigate the possibilities and pitfalls of working with a variety of media, whether that's digital, visiting special collections, working with analog books from 1,000 years ago, and everything in between. Plainly stated, faculty and students are simply unable to be successful researchers, teachers, and students here at MSU without us librarians, and this is a fact known and acknowledged by the over 900 supporters of the Union of Tenure Stream Faculty. Thank you.
Garrett, thank you. Our next speaker is Nicole Buchanan, followed by Susan Mastin. Nicole, good morning.
Good morning. As you know, my name is Nicole Buchanan, and I've had the pleasure of being in the faculty here for over 22 years now. And during my time here, I've seen MSU shine, but I've also seen MSU struggle. And I stand here today asking you to join with us to make sure this campus not only can shine, but it can thrive. I've been working to bring a tenure stream faculty union here to MSU since 2019. I've personally talked with hundreds and hundreds of our faculty about our unionizing efforts, and as an organizing committee, we have reached out to every single one of our faculty through email, and we have had one-on-one conversations with nearly three-fourths of our faculty. We have already had direct conversations with well over 1,300 of them, and to date, nearly 1,000 have signed cards saying that they want a tenure stream faculty union here at MSU. And in my conversations with our faculty, I've had the pleasure of being able to emphasize the wonderful, unique, and forward thinking of this board and the neutrality agreement that you put in place back in December of 2021. Faculty have been impressed with the position of this board to proactively agree that if a majority of our faculty want and support a union, that you would voluntarily recognize our union. To date, we've surpassed majority, surpassing what would be necessary to win an election, demonstrating a standard that aligns with the best of our democratic purposes and processes. And importantly, faculty signed authorization cards for the union with the understanding that our trustees would honor the neutrality agreement, voluntarily recognize the union, and honor the will of our faculty here at MSU. Given all of this, I stand before the board and I ask for confirmation of your commitment to the neutrality agreement, that you will honor this agreement and provide voluntary recognition for the union. And as part of your commitment, I ask you to ensure that MSU administrators provide the required list of faculty that we first requested in November and approve our recognition clause stating that who will be included in our union. This will allow us to have a final card count, prove that we have far surpassed majority, and receive voluntary recognition from our board. Let's usher in a new day at MSU. Let's work together. Let's work collaboratively to ensure that everyone here can thrive. Thank you.
Nicole, thank you very much. Our next speaker is Susan Maston, followed by Andaluna Bolsila. Susan, are you with us? Okay. Thank you. Our next speaker is Andaluna Bolsila. Andaluna, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Andaluna Bolsila. I teach in James Madison College and have taught at MSU for over 20 years. And I've been part of the unionizing movement for tenure system faculty since 2019. This effort grew out of a broader movement across the university, which was in response to the institutional crisis here, a movement for transparency and accountability for an MSU in which we are treated with respect and equitably, for an MSU centered on education and on the well-being of its people. I was then an active member on Senate, and some of us, like-minded and active faculty, started organizing. We continued through the pandemic. We saw increased demands on our labor and received little support. We had little say when our benefits and salaries were cut. This hurt us, but it also strengthened our resolve. It was and is clear to those of us who have worked in academic governance and in the union campaign that in order to really be heard, our voice needs to be more than advisory. We need an organizational structure that can bring us to the table where decisions are made. As you've heard, we've engaged broadly across this large campus and deeply with our fellow faculty in order to identify our shared concerns and what we need to do to make MSU better for all who learn and work here. This has not been easy, but organizing like this has made us understand who we are and has made us stronger. Our work as educators is at the heart of this institution. We care deeply about our students. Our union of tenure system faculty will work alongside the other unions and with academic governance to make a real difference. In 2021, this Board of Trustees adopted the neutrality resolution, and a centerpiece to that is voluntary recognition. We thank you. We have followed the process with care and resolve and have presented a reasonable unit to the administration, and we expect that the administration will respect this resolution and respect the work we have done to get here. We know that our administration could choose to invest in lawyers and firms to push back, to try to stall the legal recognition of our union. However, I believe we all share the conviction that our university's resources are best invested in education and in the well-being of our community. Moving swiftly and in collaboration with faculty is the right choice. It is an opportunity to start rebuilding trust, an opportunity that will benefit us all. Thank you.
Thank you, Andaluna. Our next speaker is Ning Shia, followed by Piotr Piazuka. Ning, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Ning Shia, Associate Professor in the Department of Sociology. I joined MSU in 2016. While I have a lot of great time with working with my colleagues and students in the past 7.5 years, I have also observed lots of instability and leadership and frustration with the administration. Notably, very soon, I will have my 6th president at MSU. Almost every single year in the past 7 years, I thought about leaving MSU. You may wonder why I'm still standing here today speaking. Why do I still care? It is because I see hope in my fellow faculty organizers who started advocating positive change in this institution way before I did. It is because I feel hopeful when I had numerous one-on-one or group conversations about union with my fellow faculty, not just those in my own department and college, but also in agriculture and natural resources, arts and letters, communication, education, engineering, human medicine, natural resource, natural science, and more. They all demand a more transparent, fair, and trustworthy campus. They sign a union card because they believe that this institution can do better. Although our unionizing has taken place when our colleagues come to campus less often because of the pandemic and because of the shooting, we as faculty organizers managed to have direct communication with more than 75% of all tenure system faculty. This is significantly higher than any election turnout rate I have seen in major elections in the U.S. Our faculty-to-faculty unionizing effort demonstrates the true value of democracy. Trustees, thank you for the neutrality resolution. And Provost, thank you for your email to faculty last week that highlights the resolution process. Both clearly state that the university will voluntarily recognize a bargaining unit if union demonstrates majority support through a card check. Given that we have already collected cards from 54% of the tenure system faculty, you should follow your commitment to complete the voluntary recognition process as soon as possible. Without fulfilling this commitment, you will hurt faculty's trust in you, which is already, honestly, quite low right now. And I hope that you will take this opportunity to rebuild the trustworthy relationship with faculty. Thank you.
Ning, thank you. Our next speaker is Piotr Piazica, followed by Purani Murukathas.
Good morning. So my name is Piotr Piecuch. Now you can hear how you should pronounce it. I'm a university distinguished professor and MSU Research Foundation professor in the Department of Chemistry. I also hold an adjunct professor appointment in the Department of Physics and Astronomy. I've worked at MSU for nearly 26 years, and I'd like to express my gratitude to all the distinguished board members for allowing UTSF, my UTSF colleagues and me to speak at this meeting. I learned about the effort to form the Union of Tenure System Faculty at MSU last summer. Since then, I've talked to many faculty members in chemistry, physics and astronomy, biochemistry and molecular biology, mathematics, CMSC and other departments at, in NATSCI and other colleges, especially the College of Engineering. In addition to getting to know more people than in all of my previous years at MSU, I've become aware that there is a very strong and broad support for establishing the faculty union on our campus. About 54% of all tenure system faculty from nearly all departments have signed union cards. About 95% in my department, that actually makes me proud to be a chemist. A large group of us, actively involved in discussions on campus, talked to more than 1,300 colleagues. About 75% of them signed the union cards. A true grassroots democracy, isn't it? While the people we talk to have their own reasons for wanting to join the union, there are common themes that practically everybody has raised during our conversations. There is a general feeling that our voice is not heard and our needs are not being met. As faculty involved, actively engaged in research, education, mentoring, outreach, and service, when it comes to issues of governance and decision-making, our opinions and experiences are often ignored and or swept under the rug. As a result, the morale among tenure system faculty at MSU is low these days. In my experience, it is at its lowest since I joined MSU in 1998. I grew up in Poland, a country where university traditions go back to the 14th century. I held faculty positions in Poland, Canada, and the United States. I gave about 300 invited lectures in nearly 30 countries around the world. In practically all academic institutions I visited, faculty are recognized as the heart and soul of the university. Many faculty members on our campus have lost that feeling. But in solidarity with them, I believe that by creating the union, we can turn these negative trends around. I am confident that the prompt recognition of our union will allow you, distinguished members of the board and MSU administration, and us, tenure system faculty, to build a stronger university and a more attractive workplace for all. This will strengthen our ability to provide outstanding education, conduct cutting-edge research, and recruit and retain the best, so that all of us, united in a common cause, can take full advantage of the enormous intellectual potential of our academic staff. I very much hope that by the time the board meets again, our union will be recognized. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Karani followed by Atiyah Abdulwasi. Karani, are you with us? Good morning.
By the way, Stefan, my name is Purani Murgadas. Greetings, trustee board. I never imagined that I would ever come face-to-face with war criminals, especially much less have my education directly supervised by them, yet here we are. Every single one of you who decided to invest $200,000+ directly into Israel and additional millions of dollars into weapons manufacturers that make the bombs, tanks, and missiles that murder and terrorize civilians in Palestine, every single one of you have the blood of more than 30,000 innocent men, women, and children on your hands. That death toll is more than half of MSU's student population. If it wasn't enough to be accomplices in war crimes against humanity, you, the board, are also a bunch of hypocrites. Your divestment from South African apartheid was supposed to send a message that MSU wouldn't stand for any apartheid then, now, and in the future. However, that clearly meant nothing, as you have no problem funding Israel's campaign to erase Palestinians off the map. You preach values of diversity and inclusion, and you claim to care about your marginalized students. However, yet you turn around and fund genocide when it can fill your pockets a little bit more. Your promises and value mean nothing. I'm not surprised by the lack of substance that your so-called values have on campus. However, in a global context, I'm not paying $30,000 every year for my education just so y'all can use that money to rob the education of Palestinians, so you can rob the lives, dreams, opportunities, hopes, the futures of the Palestinians who have done nothing wrong but be Palestinian. Shame on you and divest now. And I'm just realizing that I haven't even used my full time yet. And honestly, shame on you for that too, because it shouldn't have to take me and multiple other students speaking multiple times for more than 3 minutes for you to recognize the inhumanity in funding this kind of genocide. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker. Thank you. Our next speaker is Atiyah Abdulwasi, followed by Owen Connolly. Good morning, Atiyah.
Good morning. Alrighty, I stand before you today as a student of MSU and as an ally to Palestinian and Arab communities addressing the ongoing genocide in Gaza and your continuous investment in Israel. For over 100 days, the Israeli government has inflicted unimaginable suffering on the Palestinians, compounding 75-plus years of displacement. As a collective, we voice undisputed facts about their plight, perceived as collateral damage in the larger project of the Israeli state. Palestinian advocates forced into survival mode bear witness to atrocities, documenting horrors faced by individuals like Bissan, Plessia, and Mu'taz. These young souls are forced to objectively approach suffering of their own people just to convince America and you, alongside other post-colonial nations, that they don't deserve to die. The Palestinian people are being denied even the most basic necessities: menstrual products, food, clean water, safe shelter, clean air. Our own MSU community members from Palestine come to MSU with the hope of enacting change, oftentimes aspiring to contribute to their homeland's betterment. Individuals like Thadik Thabit, who was killed alongside his entire family by an Israeli airstrike with U.S. and MSU blood money. MSU, with its commitment to acknowledging the history of occupied land, recognizes that we are on territory ceded in the 1819 Treaty of Saginaw under the Morrill Act. We have a solemn obligation to extend this acknowledgement beyond lip service and into actionable change. I implore you to not let Palestine become another solidified occupied land. As we recite MSU's land acknowledgement, let us recognize that we have the power to make a difference. You have the power to divest from the very investments that contribute to suffering, displacement, apartheid, and genocide of the Palestinian people. Palestinian blood is on all of our hands as taxpayers, but it is on your hands for the continued investment not only in Israel, labeled as aid, but in weapons manufacturing. Money is power, and MSU's investments wield influence. It is not an impossible task, as you've heard from my previous colleagues, as we were the first university to completely divest from apartheid South Africa. People have lost faith in the U.S. People have lost faith in the U.S. government, and they are losing it if it is not already lost in you. Your money speaks louder than ever. The power to make a difference lies in your hands. The world is watching. Michigan is watching. East Lansing is watching. We are watching. And we demand action. And we demand for you to divest now. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Owen Connolly, followed by Mackenzie Kozitsky. Owen, are you with us? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Glad to see y'all are comfortable. As a sophomore student at Michigan State University, I believe that I should have the ability to weigh in on any and all decisions and motions concerning the direction that my university takes. One would assume that I would have this access, as I am paying thousands of dollars per year to attend an internationally recognized institution situated thousands of miles from my home. However, within the last year and a half, it seems as if the current Board of Trustees has done nothing but shy away from its own responsibilities in favor of throwing up cheap excuses to appease what they think the student body to be. This has also been unsuccessful due to the fact that the board does not seem to be acquainted with any of the students it is supposed to represent. For this reason, I must say that I am disappointed with the current situation at a school I worked hard to attend. The board must be open with the student body and the community about the research programs this school commits its students to, where the school's money goes after it leaves our hands, and the life-threatening issues facing its students that include Islamophobia and anti-Semitism on campus. Second, but not any less crucial than the first, I ask that the board make a greater effort to reflect the thoughts, feelings, and beliefs of all MSU students. Groups such as the JVP, MSA, and SUPER have time and time again made it clear to the faculty and leadership of Michigan State that the student body is not supportive of MSU's continued support and investment in the State of Israel. Time and time again, they have been ignored and pushed on to someone else to handle as if they were small annoyances. I did not think this reminder was necessary, but as a representative of the Michigan State University student population, I must clarify that we are no longer ignorant and naive children. We may seem like a small group of students pushing for radical change, but my peers and I represent a much larger population of students who have done their research and put their careers on the line to improve this amazing university. We all want to be part of a great university, and within the next few decades, some of us will likely occupy the seats you have now and lead the decisions for the next generation of MSU students. For this reason, I am demanding that you adopt a greater view of the beautiful diversity and complexity of my peers and classmates and begin to make the changes that will make the future a brighter place for the people who have to live in it. It is time that MSU becomes an active partner in creating the better world we all want to live in, and divesting and ending your complicity in genocide is the first step to getting there.
Our next speaker, thank you, everyone. Let's keep moving here. Mackenzie Kozitsky, followed by Hadil Ras. Mackenzie, good morning.
Good morning. Hello, my name is Mackenzie Kozitsky. I'm an MSU student speaking here about my disapproval of the board's investment of $236,000 in Israeli war forces. I'd like to begin my time by thanking the student and non-student population present today. I'm very proud to stand amongst you all. I cannot share that same sentiment with the members of the MSU Board of Trustees in reference to the topics today. As the rest of the present body today, I am here to call for an immediate divestment of Israeli occupational forces. The genocide in Palestine is occurring with the assistance of Michigan State University's money, and that is a horrifying yet irrefutable fact. The funds for genocide and ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian state is to support a modern-day colonial and imperialist persecution of thousands of lives in the displacement, along with oppression of millions. To provide hundreds of thousands of dollars to fund a genocide taking place across the globe and not rather increase funding for student support programs on campus is an atrocity considering the experiences that have taken place in the past year. To not increase support for Palestinian, Arab, and Muslim students is seeing to the facade that is ongoing, that is on campus diversity, equity, and inclusion. Furthermore, the tyrannical bombardment of Palestinian people goes to speak to the foundation of this university, a foundation that speaks to the transformation of lives, not the destruction of them. We are a university that prides themselves on community amongst alums, students, and fans, yet we seem unable to provide those same ideals to the community of our student bodies being inordinately affected by investments made. With this call to action, I and others demand for immediate change and redirection of funds, as well as an immediate statement be formed to provide supportive resources to the Palestinian, Arab, and Muslim students on campus, and to also collaborate a ceasefire resolution and have that presented by the board with MSU's advocating student body. I would also like to mention, as I see many women on the board today, that every hour, two mothers in Gaza are murdered and with the funds being provided. As we have seen in conversations today, there has been investments of reproductive justice and rights on this campus. But to not prioritize that internationally goes against the values that you seem to be advocating for. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mackenzie. Our next speaker is Hadil Ross.
Firstly, I want to address the fact that many of you walked in with Starbucks cups, a company.
We're not sort of speaking on people's behalf.
She has COVID symptoms right now, and I'm not going to like let another student be silenced because she's feeling ill.
Those are the guidelines.
We've done it before, so I'm going to go ahead and continue speaking. But firstly, I want to address the fact that many of you walked in with Starbucks cups, a company suing its union for supporting Palestinian liberation and life, and then changed your cups. My assumption is that you changed it out of shame, and if that's the case, I wish you felt that shame when you first poured your cups.
The reason
why I'm here today, though, is to ask you, how can students feel comfortable and represented when the trustees, except one, refuse to meet with us?
Yeah, can we turn
how
the mic
can your Arab and Muslim students feel safe, included, and valuable on this campus? You each received over 200 emails.
You're now being asked to leave the meeting.
You each were called upon to meet with students to discuss divestment. Parts of the email drew on MSU policy stating, and I quote, "We would like to schedule an in-person meeting between you and your representatives from our organization. As explained in the preamble of the Board of Trustees bylaws, it is the board's collective and individual responsibility to meet with us. Thus,
We've asked politely, and I understand the advocate. No, I mean I've asked politely.
Let her speak.
Okay.
Thank you. As I said before, firstly, I want to address the fact that many of you walked in with Starbucks cups, a company that's suing its union for supporting Palestinian liberation and life, then changed your cups.
My assumption is that you changed it out of shame, and if that is the case, I wish you felt that shame when you first poured your cups. This isn't surprising, though, as our administration quite literally catered Starbucks to a meeting with Arab and Muslim students, showing how tone-deaf and uneducated our administration is. But the reason why I'm here today, though, is to ask how you can ask how students can feel comfortable and represented when the trustees, except one, refuse to meet with us. How can your Arab and Muslim students feel safe, included, and valuable on campus? You received over 200 emails. You were each called upon to meet with students to discuss divestment. Part of the emails drew upon MSU policy, stating, and I quote, "We would like to schedule an in-person meeting with you and representatives from our organization. As explained in the preamble of the Board of Trustees bylaws, it is the board's collective and individual responsibility to meet with us. Thus, we will meet with each of you individually. Your participation in the Board of Trustees formally declared your intention to provide, and I quote, the opportunity for each student to realize the highest potential, to formulate reasonable rules governing student conduct, and to give due consideration to the opinions of students on matters related directly to their interests. The board's failure to respond to student correspondences, whether it be during public comments or emails sent to the board, contradicts your duties. It is your responsibility to preserve the best of our cultural, social, and political heritage. Arguably, this would include MSU's history of clarity on human rights issues of genocide and apartheid, for example, the divestment and best practices for apartheid South Africa. It is your duty to be, and I quote, ever responsive to the increasing needs of a dynamic and complex society by developing and carrying on programs of public service and to diffuse the knowledge and information that will contribute to the well-being and development of people of our state, our nation, and around the world. The ongoing genocide in Palestine, in which there are many more daily deaths than any other 21st century aggression, including those in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Ukraine, Afghanistan, and Sudan, necessitates an immediate meeting. MSU must take student demands into serious consideration and act. Your Arab and Muslim students cannot be continuously failed and rejected. Our Palestinian students are most disproportionately affected. But if you don't want to believe me, we can try to use the words of the Higher Learning Commission. Section 1A states, the university must advance outreach, engagement, and economic development activities that are innovative, research-driven, and lead to a better quality of life for individuals and communities at home and around the world. Again, emphasis on around the world. Section 1B states, the institution's educational responsibilities take primacy over other purposes, such as generating financial returns for investors, contributing to a related or parent organization, or supporting external interests. And the institution engages with its external constituencies and responds to their needs, its mission and capacity allows. So your rejection to discuss divestment is a blatant example of violating this section. According to Section 1C, the university fails to demonstrate inclusive and equitable treatment of diverse populations through processes and activities, and foster a climate of respect among all students, faculty, staff, and administrators from a range of different backgrounds, ideas, and perspectives. As per Section 2C, the governing board's deliberations must reflect priorities to serve and enhance the institution, and the governing board reviews the reasonable and relevant interests of the institution's internal and external constituencies during its decision-making deliberations. Again, rejecting meeting with students, the board's constituencies, appears to be another violation. Lastly, Section 3D requires the institution provide student support services and suited to the needs of student populations, and the institution provides for learning support and preparatory instruction to address the academic needs of its students. It has a process for directing entering students to courses and programs for which the students are adequately prepared. Much of the support Arab and Muslim communities have found has been peer-to-peer. We are in a position where our students rise up to the occasion and do what they can for one another. Part of this is because our resilience and strength, but another part is because this university continues to fail us. It takes away from our academic success and puts us in places where we're spread too thin. Our academic and student success is limited and shaped by the state of incompetence the board and other members of the administration seem to be stuck in. Your students matter more than the bottom line. You can't keep tokenizing your Black, Indigenous, and other students of color and not show up when we call on you.
As much as I appreciate the meetings that have happened thus far, the action and material-based support is minimal. But again, if you won't listen to me or the words of my peers, listen to the principles you're held accountable for.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Mike Baylor, followed by Samantha Barney. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. You know, I'm no stranger to these meetings. I think this is probably number 40 in a row. It's been 3+ years. And I just have to say, like I said often, the amount of people that feel the need to come here is indicative to me of one of our core institutional failures. I don't know what kind of engagement goes on behind the scenes with groups like the young people who just spoke or the ones before them, but it just doesn't seem enough or sufficient. And so we keep having these meetings where it shouldn't be like this. That's all I got to say. And so people have told me, you know, what are you thinking, Mike? Like, why would you run for this board again? And I am. I just announced last week my candidacy for trustee of Michigan State University for the 24 election. I've met a lot of good people at Michigan State. This place is an awesome school. And we owe our young men and women here honesty and truth. And we owe them stability. And we haven't given them that. And so I'm committed to helping stabilize this board and listening to the constituents, whatever their problems are, so that they don't feel the need to come to this meeting and speak. But if you do feel the need, you're here and you're heard. Doesn't mean there's going to be action, as we all know, but you get heard. So I'd like to say, like, we have no shortage of problems here, and we can't window dress it, right? We can't window dress it with the good stuff. We celebrate the good stuff, but to be true, we have to really look at the problems. I mean, largely, President Stanley is no longer here because he filed false federal Title IX reports. At all schools in the country, which one would you want to get that right at most often? We have an administration that not only can't handle Title IX, they weaponize it against business school deans who deserve better. We want to know who knew what and when regarding the Coach Tucker fiasco. I direct everyone to the reporting that was done before Thanksgiving, which says that Athletic Director Haller knew what had happened and wanted to suspend Coach Tucker before the season started and was stopped by members of the administration. I'd like to know who. Lansing is a small town. It's an open secret around town that Coach Tucker wasn't welcome at the Lansing Country Club because of improprieties there. Yet that happened during the time that Michigan State knew about the Brenda Tracy problem and he still was allowed to coach. So more to come on that. And I'd like to say that MSU is not committed, because we take these things collectively, to the safety of young women on campus. As the father of three young women, I cannot and will not accept that. I won't. As I go around the state during these next few months talking about Michigan State, be amazed at what is on the lips of the Spartan alums and the people that care about this school, and they just want to believe in it again. And in case you think what I'm saying is a little bit too harsh, I direct you to the words of Harry Truman. When he would tell people the truth, they'd say, well, give them hell, Harry. And he said it wasn't hell. I just told them the truth, and they thought it was hell.
Thank you, Mike. Samantha is not on Zoom, but I believe Kayla Williams is on Zoom. So, Kayla, can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We'll come back if she is. Kayla, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yep. Good morning.
Okay. Excellent. So, hi, my name is Kayla Williams, and I am here representing the battle for Spartan Swim and Dive. I'd like to briefly summarize some of our learnings and accomplishments, and I'm happy to share some of the supporting data again upon request. So, first, the High School Swim and Dive All-American data supports the claim that high school students in Michigan value swim and dive at a rate higher than the population of the state would lead them to achieve by chance. They fall into the top five for swimming on a population-adjusted basis and outright in the top five nationally for boys and girls diving. And I'm proud to say I had the opportunity to actually coach one of the most recent diving All-Americans last year. Second, MSU's own facility use data supports our argument that the new Health and Wellness Center can more than accommodate sharing lanes to support a swim and dive team without any limitations to providing improved programming for students. This assessment takes into account closing all three existing 25-yard pools on campus. And third, MSU's own advancement department identified $5 million in funds that could be used to help offset the financial aspect of reinstatement, and both our group and national experts in the field stand ready to support the university in enacting a plan that the athletic department has already drafted in the event the return of these programs is supported. I plan to spend all of my 3 minutes reiterating the reasons why reinstatement of these programs makes sense on paper, but instead I'd like to leave you a bit more insight into why I'm so passionate about this cause. I've been coaching diving in the state of Michigan over the past 10 years, and I do not do this because I have a bunch of free time to fill, but rather because I believe in the benefits these types of programs can provide. When A.D. Beekman announced the cuts back in 2020, I was furious, but college athletics had taught me the 3 important lessons. 1, exercise is an effective way for me to manage frustration and stress. 2, I can do hard things. And 3, everything is better with a team. So I started running, collaborated with the fine people who make up the Battle for Spartan Swim and Dive, and I got to work on a more productive rather than destructive solution. Last fall, my family was forced to navigate an incredibly traumatic medical diagnosis. Without going into details, it was easily the most life-altering experience that I never wanted to have. I often found myself reflecting on how fortunate I was to have had the opportunity to practice, actively practice, working through adversity on a daily basis through college athletics. This regular experience and practice overcoming stressful physical and mental states no doubt played a critical role in my ability to navigate all the uncertainty and stress that followed. It also taught me how to recognize my own limitations and when to ask for help. And that's what brings me to speak with you today. We all have experiences that have shaped who we are and passion that drives us to action. I'd like to remind you that we all have one thing in common, an unwavering love for Michigan State University. We are all actively engaged in trying to make MSU better, so I'd like to ask, will you support our request to facilitate a discussion across all relevant university units to give our proposal a fighting chance? Go Green.
Thank you very much, Kayla. We will go to James Thurston next, followed by Valerie Van Frank. James, are you with us via Zoom?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much. Thank you. First, let me commend the search committee and Alan Haller for 2 outstanding hires in President Guskowitz and Coach Smith. If we are honest with ourselves as Spartans, we would have been happy with just 1 of the 2, and we got both. I'm very hopeful for our future and turning a new page. Given that it is an Olympic year, I thought I'd mention that in June, the swimming Olympic trials will be in my hometown of Indianapolis in the Colts Olympic Stadium, or at Lucas Oil Stadium. You are welcome to be my guest. Swimming is the 2nd most popular summer Olympic sport, a close 2nd to gymnastics. This 8-day, 16-session trials will have a seating capacity of 35,000 or 280,000 fans in the NFL arena. To do this, 2 adjacent pools will be built for warm-up and warm-down. Regardless of the team for MSU, in order to host 50-meter competitions, the Olympic distance, and to maximize the soon-to-be statewide asset, the Health and Wellness Center design needs to have a separate well, which it currently does not, like the Holland, Michigan facility does. Let's not be penny-wise, and let's build what should be built. In addition, it seems that the university is shortchanging its own fundraising efforts for this facility by seemingly segregating its donors. Why not have the Draymond Green Rec Courts, the Kirk Cousins Weight Room, or the Justin Ispia Health and Wellness Center, in line with the new policies approved today? Let's collaborate for a better MSU, but people's hands seem to be tied. This summer's Olympics will also feature Leo Marchand, who will win the gold in the 200 IM and 400 IM. The Frenchman is coached by Bob Bowman, Michael Phelps' coach, at Arizona State, a school that reinstated their swim and dive program and is now number 2 in the country. Speaking of Olympic coaches, just a reminder that Olympic coach Mike Bottom would consider helping reinstate swimming and diving at Michigan State to be one of the greatest accomplishments of his career, right up there with producing and coaching Olympians. Most every U.S. swimming and diving Olympian and many foreigners have had part of their training at U.S. universities. On the subject of champions, Virginia were national champions last year without a 10-meter platform. On the money front, I hope that President Guskowitz can take a more holistic look at the millions we have raised that Kayla mentioned, and this time includes millions more in bequests. By taking the myopic view of short-term needs and not long-term sustainability, what MSU has effectively told me is that your life work is meaningless. To be honest, it's insulting to so passionately love a school and to be shunned in this manner. And there's much more beyond just myself. Our goals are aligned, and I'm willing to make an irrevocable bequest. My master's alma mater, Northwestern, does not share the same view. Finally, as a reminder, the most recent rowing team photo shows suddenly the 70 to 74 rowers versus the 94 in the last GERD report. I'm curious how this gets presented in June. MSU has had enough to see. Let's do right by women and allowing them real athletic participation. Look forward with President Guskowitz on the reinstatement of swim and dive. Go Green.
Thanks, James. Our next speaker is Valerie von Frank, and then I think Lucius has joined us. So, Valerie, are you with us? Good morning.
Good morning. Believe me, I'm as tired of being here as you are of seeing me. I want to first say that on a personal note, please support this student push and divest. Follow your morals for once and follow your actions with words. And then I have this all laid out, but I'm going to go to this general feeling that our voices are not heard that one of the faculty members said. Over the last 6 years, I have continued to say to you that you make excuses that change with the wind for not doing things. You have a string of broken promises over the last 6 years. All of these groups seem to be coming to you and asking this administration to work together. And there's a failure to respond and engage with people. This administration reached out to us through an intermediary and wanted to meet with us. And when we said, Posse said, we will only meet with you. We'd love to. We've been wanting that. We've been asking for it. We emailed the president's office. And we said, but it has to be a private meeting. You cannot speak of it publicly and use it as a check-the-boxes exercise. And lo and behold, no response after that. You talk all the time about how you are trauma-informed, and yet you had the grace and humanity to respond to your professor who was talking about suicide, but you don't recognize you just signed a long-term lease at the building 4660 Hagedorn, that is the site of so incredibly much trauma for the 546 survivors that you have recognized. I was supposed to speak the words that the sister survivors gave me. They're just too overwhelmed to be here. Alyssa says that she wants to recognize the organization I have the right to. She would like every student on this campus to know that they have rights and they are not a mob. I have the right to feel safe with advisors, educators, and any person in a position of authority over me on campus. I have a right to feel safe on this campus, to feel safe reporting sexual assault, to know that abusers will be held accountable, to know how I'm being protected by my university, to be treated with respect and dignity, to be included in meetings about the issues that I've brought up. For example, the sister survivors were not even told ahead of time of this morning's announcement of a timeline for the release of the records. You know how to reach us. You know how to get that word out. Why can't you include sister survivors who didn't even see the resolution that you introduced on December the 15th ahead of time and had to be... The trustee had to be asked to read it. We have a list of questions, a lot of them around sexual assault, around Alan Haller's request to fire Tucker, around the underreporting of the Clery Act, around a man who still works here, one of five who still works here, who's been reported to continually, more than once, more than twice, sexually harass the students on this campus. And his 2017 disciplinary action of going to some training obviously has not had an effect. We have a trustee, Professor Kanacki, who whose website is hosted by Two Cows, which openly enables and supports neo-Nazism, pedophilia, and bigotry. Why is this interim outgoing president allowing a faculty member to attack students and call them a mob? I know.
Yeah, thank you. Please conclude.
I'm concluding. All I can say is that I appreciate the new transparency with records release. I appreciate the transparency with the release of other investigations, and I so much look forward, as do the girls, to a new start with an incoming president.
Thank you, Valerie. Our next speaker is Lucius Basser. Lucius, good morning.
Good morning. Dr. Fletcher, I want to start out by thanking you for the courtesy of allowing me to speak. I know I arrived a little late and beyond when I was to be called, coming in from Detroit. Madam Chair, trustees, Interim President Woodruff, as we celebrate Black History Month, I'd like to share a few reflections on the importance of recognizing the contributions of Black Spartans. Often the highest recognition and praise is reserved for those who exhibit excellence as student athletes, but there are legendary Black alumni who have enriched the legacy of this university. It would be impossible in the time allotted to list them all, but I do want to recognize a few. If I could list them all, I would certainly recognize Vice President Lynch. Virgil Clark Smith. Coming from Conant Gardens in Detroit as a student in the late 60s, Virgil was a student activist. That passion for service to our people led him to public office, where he served honorably in the Michigan House of Representatives, the Michigan Senate, the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office, and Wayne County's Third Circuit Court as a presiding judge. He gave many Black Spartans the start in public service, including me as an intern and eventually as chief of staff. His legacy includes a list of Spartans who went on to become lawyers, judges, lobbyists, corporate executives, and entrepreneurs. Felicia Wasson, Tyrone Sanders, Lisa Whitmore, all received their start from Virgil and have gone on to also pour into the lives of countless Spartans. Maxie C. Jackson, Jr. Dr. Jackson is a retired member of the MSU faculty. Throughout his tenure and beyond, he has been a trusted advisor, a wise counselor, and an advocate for countless MSU students, and a particular inspiration to young Black men who seek honorable achievement in every field of human endeavor. In closing, I would like to also honor and encourage the current MSU Black students, especially those who are active in the Black Student Alliance. Your continual advocacy for marginalized students through Radical Black Love is as relevant and necessary today as when the organization was started in 1967. We need you, Soul Board. Keep fighting. You are Black excellence and Black history in the making. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll ask our IT team if we've been able to find Samantha Barony on sort of the Zoom. No. Okay. So we will, Interim President Woodruff, that will conclude today's public comment.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Fletcher. I now call upon Chairperson Dr. Rima Vassar to present the public participation on other items. To present the liaison's report, chairperson's report, and trustee's comment. Thank you.
Thank you. And I understand we're missing one person today. Everything is okay, though. Yeah. Okay. All right. So we'll start with we start with you all first, right? Yes. Wait, we now will hear the student liaison report. Sorry. I was right, and then I switched over. So, Emily, I think you're first. You're okay?
I'm fine.
Okay, green suit.
It's not cooperating. Hi, everyone. For those of you who I have not met yet, my name is Emily Hoyempa, and I'm the ASMSU and MSU undergraduate student body president. For probably the only time this year, my report today will be rather brief. Starting off this semester, ASMSU has had 60 bills go through our General Assembly. Going back to our first two sessions of the spring semester, we have passed bills related to addressing food insecurity on campus in partnership with other organizations that do so already, as well as working with MSU Parking, DPPS, and PACE to address the cost of student parking and the cost of subsequent parking tickets. These are some great ideas, and as the session comes to an end in a few months, I know more fantastic things are yet to come. Along with that, we continue to work with VP Lynch on campus safety. ASMSU is also grateful for the work VP Lynch has done at MSU, and although we will be sad to see him go, his impact on the MSU community will always be remembered. Additionally, ASMSU is continuing to work with Dr. Travis and CAPS on student mental health and pushing those resources out to more Spartans, as well as making sure those resources, such as therapy, group therapy, and psychiatric care, are ones that Spartans would actually benefit from and meet the needs of the community at large. With that, as the ADP is also in the process of being revised, which quite frankly is long overdue, and I think we could all admit that, ASMSU is continuing its work with VP Ruglis to ensure that the resources to support and call injustices are more accessible than they are right now, because if you've heard our students, they're just not. ASMSU is also continuing meeting with VP Gore, Interim Provost Yitzko, and Interim President Woodruff to best push student concerns in and outside the classroom to the forefront and to overall better the Spartan experience. Last but not least, I've also had the chance to meet with President-elect Guskowitz, and I'm trying to remain incredibly optimistic that MSU has brighter days ahead. But quite frankly, if you sit in meetings like these and hear about the amount of things that I do, sometimes it's harder than others. As Interim President Woodruff brought up in her remarks, there have been numerous collaborations across campus to remember those as we have lost as the university comes to mark the 1 year of violence on our campus, which is something no student should have to say and that we should not have had to talk about. ASMSU, in collaboration with March for Our Lives, Students Demand Action, and Sit Down Michigan State, have a week of advocacy and programming from February 12th to February 16th. More details will be released later today, so please be on the lookout for that. ASMSU has also had the chance to talk and work alongside the Community Center for Engaged Learning for the day's service and are incredibly grateful for the support that they have provided. As for the other programming advocacy, I just want to once again emphasize that this would all not be possible without the work in collaboration and partnership with March for Our Lives, Students Demand Action, and Sit Down Michigan State. And I just want to once again say thank you to all of them. Last but not least, I'm one student of 51,000 and one Spartan in a campus and a community of so many more. And it also should go without saying that cops shouldn't try and stop a student when they're speaking. That just really didn't sit right with me. Regardless of whether or not you agree with them, just please listen. And just it made me incredibly uncomfortable, and I'm sure it made many in here as well. There are so many Spartans on this campus that are hurting, especially our Spartans of color that do not have the institutional support from this university or representation to the board that actually voices these concerns. Being in this position this year, I've frequently seen that, and it's just really difficult. Specifically, our Spartans of color should not feel like they have to fight their own battles because no one in this administration cares to join them in that journey. Please listen to the students as they talk about their needs. Listen to them as they talk about divestment. Listen to them saying that they don't feel supported. I can only bring up so many things. Maybe it would be a Band-Aid. I'm not quite sure. But something I'm hoping to see by the end of my term is to find a way for the board administration as a whole to find other ways to hear student feedback outside of those who sit in the liaison seat, especially our students of color. Out of the four liaisons, I am the only student of color up there, and there's just not the representation that students of color on this campus deserve, especially at a predominantly white institution. Whether it be a president's council with student leaders across campus, because there are so many student organizations and so many prominent student leaders doing such fantastic things, to better outreach to student groups that already exist, an increase or actual effort into town halls, because I think there's been maybe one since I've been here, and it's my third year as a student, or something brand new that no one has thought of yet, it should not just be on the liaisons, faculty, and students alike to be responsible for every single thing. Once again, to the board, to the Michigan State University Administration, and to whoever else may be listening, please listen to those public commenting today, and please validate why they're bringing these concerns to this meeting. They shouldn't have to be here voicing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. Maddie.
Hi, all. I'm so glad to be able to be back in person for the first meeting of the year. As it's the start of the semester, I have some general updates of things I've been working on as the at-large student liaison from last semester as well as over the break. I'm not sure if you recall, but a big focus of mine last semester was on student support. More specifically, students that have taken on the responsibility of holding leadership positions across campus on top of their academics. This has led me to the start of working on a leadership initiative with the goal in mind to help students continue to build on the foundation they already have as a leader and develop new skill sets that will carry them into the future. This initiative is also constructed to help bridge the gap between all different aspects of the Michigan State community. What this has led me to is that I've started to develop a student leadership initiative. Did just say that, sorry. While this program is still in its early stages, the program as a whole would be open to both graduate and undergraduate students and works to pair them with mentors that would be coming from administration, faculty, and hopefully even the Board of Trustee members. Michigan State has so many incredible resources at the tips of our fingers. What we need to do now is make sure that students know enough that they can utilize these resources. Right now, I'm looking forward to starting to expand my team and work with a committee to continue to work on this program with the hopes to get it off the ground officially in the fall. On another note of student support, with such a heavy week coming up for our community, it is really appreciated to hear all the time and energy that has gone into ensuring students are provided everything they need in order to heal. This personally gives me a lot of hope on how we will be moving forward with students very clearly in our minds, because support cannot stop at the end of February. Furthermore, on things I'm looking forward to continuing to work on in the future, communication. I think it's safe to say the majority of communication that comes from the university and administration comes through the form of emails. While this has been seen to be somewhat effective and needed due to the formal nature of the content within these emails, there's still a piece missing in the information students are getting, as well as how much students actually know about the things that come along with being a student here at Michigan State. In the coming semester, I'm very excited to continue working through developing a stronger communication strategy to help make the board and university more accessible to the student body as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you, Maddie. Anna,
good morning.
Good morning.
On behalf of the graduate students and professional students of Michigan State University, I would like to briefly address some of the initiatives that the Council of Graduate Students and its colleagues here at MSU have been taking in order to do preventative work that will help to ensure the improvement of health and wellness here on our campus. For example, we have been doing workshops on things like bystander training, how to deal with conflict in the workplace. These are unfortunately things that do happen, but we can always be stronger in responding to it. I would also like to talk about our upcoming graduate academic conference, or the GAC. This has been a collaborative effort that has only been able to be completed thanks to the willingness and the support of graduate and professional students just like myself that, of course, hold a part-time job at the same time that they try to do everything else to encourage and benefit our graduate and professional student community. I would briefly, personally, like to say that I am pro-union, as my father was a unionist. And I think that our first step towards making unions a normal part of our campus is a wonderful step. And I hope that we can carry this through administration as smoothly as humanly possible. Mind you, I said humanly possible. And I think that I personally also think that that we as people are going to be very surprised in the kinds of changes that we see in our own personal stances towards things as time moves along. So I encourage all of us, including myself, to carry open minds and open hearts, and to never see the past as a precedent, but the current state of affairs as a precedent for everything going forward. Because I know that as someone who might be considered to be on the spectrum, I have a hard time letting things go. And yet, the biggest thing I've learned coming here to MSU is that you should always admit when you were wrong, but also always and see that not as a matter of personal failure, but as a matter of personal growth. Mm-hmm. And just apply that to anything that's been said here today. I will be, of course, stepping down pretty soon, and my successor will hopefully be with me here at the next meeting. It's been an honor serving my fellow graduate professional students. As you may know, I only stepped into the role because no one else wanted the job. Perhaps a testament to how demanding sometimes these things can be. And I can assure you that in the past and even now, I have shook visibly every time that I've been here on the stand, and my voice also shakes. But I think that maybe I have made it so that there's now, we don't have to beg people anymore to be the president of COGS. And that I think was worth all the effort. So thank you very much.
Hannah, we have appreciated so much your strength and stamina, but also your humanity. Every time you come with an open heart, open mind, and you've been an exemplar for what it looks like to be a leader who serves with humility and grace. Thank you all three, because it is a big sacrifice, as you noted, to be a student and to serve in this role. So I appreciate your sacrifice of service, and I appreciate your words today as well. We will now have the faculty liaison report, Dr. Jack Lipton.
Thank you, Trustee Vassar. Yesterday, the faculty liaisons to the board discussed the importance of investing in our physical and our human infrastructure, places and people. We understand that the board must balance the cost of education for students with the need to keep MSU a vibrant, top-tier education and research institution. Pay raises have lagged inflation for years. We have seen the consequences on faculty turnover, which increases the need for recruitment dollars. While we see shiny new buildings opening around campus, they do not keep pace with buildings that are becoming obsolete, unsafe, past their useful lives, and too expensive to maintain. The costs of personnel and infrastructure put immense pressure on the need for additional revenue. Our main sources of revenue are tuition and state appropriations. Indeed, we discussed how we all could partner around the inequities of the appropriations process for public universities in the Michigan legislature. Did you all know that the University of Michigan receives $19,752 per in-state pupil? They receive the highest amount per in-state pupil in Michigan. One might think, that makes sense. I assume Michigan State is number two, right? Nope. Michigan MSU is number seven per in-state pupil. Western, Michigan Tech, Northern, Lake Superior State all receive more per in-state pupil from the Michigan legislature than MSU. Michigan State only receives $9,533 per in-state student, less than half of what the University of Michigan receives. Think about that. Why do we have public institutions of higher education in Michigan? It is to educate the people of Michigan. 60% of MSU undergrads stay in Michigan. One-third go into STEM, a priority for economic growth within the state. 25% are Pell eligible, meaning that they are from relatively low-income homes. 22% are first-generation college goers. MSU's two medical schools graduate five times the number of doctors that stay in-state as compared to the University of Michigan. Why does this inequity exist? It is because the formula used by the Michigan legislature for allocating these funds is not linked to whether Michigan's public universities fulfill their primary mission, educating Michiganders. We look forward to partnering with the board, the administration, students, staff, and other faculty to address this inequity with our state's lawmakers. We might not solve it this year, definitely not, but over time, we can fulfill our mission to further educate our elected officials. After all, they are in state, so it fits our mission. Before the next meeting of this board, a new president will be leading the university. We want to commend President Woodruff for her service, her leadership through some truly tumultuous, dark, and traumatizing times. Throughout it all, she has remained optimistic, solutions-oriented, and laser-focused on the welfare of this university, which is its people. Thank you, President Woodruff. As the new president takes office, we very much expect that the board to adhere to its own code of ethics and conduct and its signed agreement to stay in its lane. Already, we have seen a lack of cooperation from one trustee with the investigation into the leak of Brenda Tracy's identity. It comes down to accountability. Will you hold each other accountable? The Faculty Senate very much looks forward to the conclusion of the Miller and Chevalier investigation of Trustee Scott's allegations and statements of fact. It was these statements of fact that resulted in the Faculty Senate filing a complaint with our accrediting body, the Higher Learning Commission. If the results from this investigation highlight or affirm issues that jeopardize the success of this university, we hope our colleagues on the board will demonstrate whether their signatures on the agreement with President Guskowitz are worth more than the paper on which they signed. Finally, with 213 approaching, we cannot forget the human trauma that engulfed this campus a year ago. That night, the Spartan community lost friends, peers, classmates, and family members, and made us all question our safety, our security, and once again, the health of our greater society. The coarsening of our societal interactions grows, and such collective traumas, this includes responding to the deaths in Palestine that Saba and Elisa and their peers discussed, and the risk at MSU is no different. However, Spartans have indeed been coming together over this past year in service of collective healing and action. We need to do this difficult work in support of each other. Sandy Dahl, who lost her husband, the pilot of Flight 93, in 9/11, aptly said, "If we learn nothing else from tragedy, we learn that life is short and there is no time for hate." Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lipton. Happy New Year and Happy Black History Month. In January, we paid tribute to the remarkable life and enduring legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a reverend figured, revered and a reverend that is in the fight for justice and the fight against injustice, much like the folks who came here today. I will talk later about the legacy of Michigan State, because although we can't live in the past, like you said, Hannah, Michigan State has a history of fighting for justice, and so I want to highlight that. We remember Dr. King saying, "As you press on to justice, be sure to move with dignity and discipline, using only the weapon of love." Love. I just want to take a moment. I didn't know you were coming. I didn't see the speakers list. I appreciate you, Lucius. I don't get to do any of the work that I do in the quest for liberation without a partner who is like-minded, supportive, and loving, and really, really patient. I appreciate you. As we were going through the remarks earlier today, I got an email, a text message from my son's one-on-one. He's on the spectrum too, Hannah. So he has an aide, and she sent me pictures of him with a bird in class. And I just appreciate you, Lucius, because you were late because you're getting home to school. I just appreciate you more than you can know. We celebrated Dr. King with a cornucopia of celebrations and events. The Office of Institutional Diversity and Inclusion has big plans. And we are especially excited for the Excellence in Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Awards ceremony happening next week. You should probably try to get there. A lot of MSU faculty, staff, and students will be recognized for their exceptional and innovative work in the Spartan community. I'm also thrilled to talk about the Alienware grand opening. We were there yesterday, the Communication Media Arts. Did I say that correctly? Yeah. So That place is amazing. It also lets you know how old you are, because I didn't know any of those games. Although they did, one of the characters did have Donkey Kong, and I was able to, Atari, that's what my era is, Atari. You probably don't even know what Atari is. kind of, sort of. Yeah, pretty analog, but they had Atari and Pac-Man, and I think I recognize Pokemon, but that place is amazing. It's a space created through a collaboration with Dell Technologies, its gaming brand, Alienware. Interim President Woodruff and Lieutenant Garland Gilchrist and Trustee Deno actually inaugurated this initiative in January. It's a state-of-the-art facility, and it's a testament to our commitment to providing cutting-edge resources for our students, particularly in the burgeoning field of esports. It's a legitimate sport where we are taking home championships, like we are winning out here. February 13th holds a significant place in our hearts, and I think Dr. Lipton, you spoke about this. It brings back memories of truly difficult time on our campus. Get through. Our thoughts turn to the remembrance of this tragedy, and our campus experienced a collective trauma that day. We just need to make sure that we take care of one another, hold each other close, and again, center love, patience, and a trust that we all want the best for one another. As we get through this month and the months to come, we want to express our deepest condolences. We stand with the students and all of the families and their friends as our university continues to navigate the path of healing. It's in these times that we're reminded just how much strength we draw from being united as a Spartan community and that we are stronger together. Also, I want to thank you, Interim President Woodruff. I express our collective gratitude to you for your unwavering leadership. There has been dark days, and you have stepped up in a way that an interim generally might not do that. But I think when we talked the first day, I said, you should lead like you're the leader, like you are the president. And I think you embodied that and took it on, embodied the interim presidency. Your steadfast commitment to our institution's mission has been inspirational, and the board would like to present a resolution to you outlining your contributions and achievements at MSU. The resolution reads, Michigan State University has been privileged to have Teresa K. Woodruff, PhD, serve as its interim president since November 4th, 2022. Dr. Woodruff has exemplified a visionary leadership overseeing the university's longstanding mission of education, research, and outreach in implementing MSU's 2030 strategic plan. Her tenure as chief executive has been marked by significant advancements in MSU's strategic initiatives, building trust across the university community and fostering excellence. We recognize her steadfast leadership during the tragedy that occurred on February 13, 2023, and her commitment to improving the safety of our Spartan community. Dr. Woodruff has diligently worked to strengthen the partnerships and relationships both within the university and externally, including with faculty, staff, students, alums, legislators, donors, and the broader community. Her efforts have invigorated Michigan State University's physical spaces, including advancing the new dairy and greenhouse facilities, the MSU Museum, a plant science building, an engineering and digital innovation center, and a multicultural center. Dr. Woodruff has inspired the MSU community through a shared vision, values, and measurable outcomes, significantly enhancing the university's commitment to advance knowledge and transform lives. Her leadership as interim president has been an extension of her esteemed academic career, including her role as a provost and executive vice president for academic affairs at MSU, and as a notable leader and educator at Northwestern University. She was named American Council of Education Michigan Chapter Women's Distinguished Leader in 2022. She was also recognized by the MSU Council of Graduate Students with the Above and Beyond Administrative Leadership Award. She is nationally active in leadership roles, including the National Academy of Medicine, Climate Change, and Health Interest Group. Dr. Woodruff's contributions to science and education have been nationally and internationally recognized, including her innovation in the field of
Oncofertility. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Her advocacy for inclusive research practices and her numerous awards and honors, such as the Presidential Award for Excellence in Science Mentoring. Dr. Woodruff's dedication has been impactful in prioritizing student leadership and engagement and contributing to the enriching experience of our student body. The MSU Board of Trustees extends its deepest gratitude to Dr. Teresa K. Woodruff for her compassionate leadership, steadying influence, and unwavering commitment to MSU, its people, and its mission. The Board of Trustees, Michigan State University, wishes Dr. Teresa K. Woodruff all the best. We are confident she will continue contributing significantly to academia and beyond.
Thank you.
And I would like to present you with a certificate with the resolution. And if we could all take a picture together, that would be awesome. So if we all would stand and come together. Is this light good, though? Okay. Are you cut? What's happening?
I think they're laughing at Dennis at the bottom.
I think.
No, the top. Dennis, one, two, three. Again, one, two, three.
Divest now! Divest now! Divest now!
I know you meant it with your chest. So I appreciate you coming every time. I appreciate all the speakers for showing up again.
I appreciate it
if
you actually
digested. Yeah, so I'm going to get to that. I'm just going to finish my remarks. Yeah, I'm going to finish my remarks, though.
What's the excuse? Go ahead and let it go.
I don't have any excuses.
All right, let's get it going.
I have zero excuses. Again, I'm here to listen. So I appreciate the bravery that it takes to come and to actually engage in civil disobedience and to raise your voice. I appreciate that. So you don't have an enemy in me. I appreciate you coming and holding us accountable, and you should every time. It is hard to listen to folks who are in pain. I do want to recognize that. As an empath, I do feel all of those emotions, and it's very difficult to hear folks come month after month to these meetings and show and demonstrate what they've experienced on a personal level. So it's not landing on deaf ears or a hard heart, but I'm one person, so I'm here to listen, and I always will be. We've done a lot this year. In the midst of an incredibly difficult year. I think there have been 13 campuses who have experienced a shooting across the United States. We're one, right? We had issues with students not feeling safe or welcomed here, and their families and their communities not being safe abroad. There's been issues, again, with Title IX that I don't like to be in the news for. With all of that, I think you should probably look up the glass cliff. But with all of that, I'm proud of some of the things that we've done here at MSU, particularly the committee work that has happened with the Board of Trustees. We have a lot of work to do. I do not deny this. We have a lot of professional development that we've engaged in. We've got some systems to put into place, some policies to develop, some understandings of what our roles are to be discussed and then agreed upon. We're doing that work and we're committed to that work. The committee work has come out of the leadership of this year and last year. And I want to commend Trustee Tebe for her work with the Student Life and Culture Committee. That committee was pretty much a non-factor. I think what you did was try to make sure that students were heard, particularly by the people who can make the changes that they need to make, which is not the trustees. We are not over the daily operations of this campus. It's a general oversight. And so that you were able to put in these structures is really important. That you brought a student here to talk to us for the first time is important work. And this committee work, I think, is important as we continue to govern ourselves as a board. At this moment, I think there are no boundaries for MSU. We are global leaders in research, teaching, and alumni relationships. As a land-grant institution in Michigan, however, our first responsibility is to Michiganders. It is true, Dr. Lipton, we have the most Michigan graduates, and our graduates tend to stay in state more than any other group. But we also have a commitment to our global community. Antiquated leadership styles demand seemingly omniscient leaders. Outdated leadership archetypes value those who pretend to have all the answers and are afraid to simply say, I do not know. Effective leaders, however, know that they cannot fathom what they do not know. That's why it's important for you to come and talk with us. No one can know everything. Within his darkest hours, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. profoundly felt what he did not know. For example, in that Birmingham jail. In those moments, he leaned into faith in his God, the seeds he had planted, and the promise of humanity. I do not know everything. For example, I did not know that lithium batteries could explode in the plane. Learned that here last year as a trustee. I'm grateful to know that and a bit terrified. But I learned that as a trustee with an open mind and a posture to learning. And I've learned so much. Some of these lessons have come through very harsh means, but I appreciate the learning nonetheless. I appreciate the learning, the growing, and expanding my world through knowledge. And MSU continues to teach me. You continue to teach me. What I learn most about, what persistently piques my curiosity, what I endeavor to gain expertise is in education. I have devoted my entire life to education because I know its transformative power. I know education is our most potent weapon to combat ignorance and prejudice. I know that education is a salve for suppression, a healing balm for injustice, an elixir for all that ails us in society. I know education is the path forward for a gentler, kinder, more progressive world. A kinder, gentler, more progressive world. MSU has been a leader, an exemplar in civil and human rights. From President Wharton to the first integrated collegiate football team to the first to divest from apartheid. MSU has pioneered humanity over and over and over again. We have a legacy of struggle. We have a legacy of being on the right side of history. Like Dr. King, it is time to lean into our faith and into the good seeds we have planted. The time is now for our commitment to the full rights of all in our community to be realized, and for every Spartan to feel safe, welcomed, a sense of belonging and community, and that they are valued. Our historical commitment to civil rights needs to be renewed to a contemporary determination to once again pave the way, light the green path to justice for every Michigander and every global citizen. MSU is poised to be a leader in learning, new learning that propels the world forward into the realization of our fullest potential, the greatest versions of ourselves. As we move into this next chapter for our Spartan community, let us rely on our faith. In a quest for higher learning, let us boldly and energetically stretch toward the highest goal of education, which is our individual and collective freedom. Education, MSU's call to higher learning, is our only promise to humanity. Go green.
We'll next move to trustee comments, so Vice Chair Kelly.
Thank you. I'll keep my comments short. A couple of comments. Yesterday we received from the student liaisons an update with regard to the honoring of February 13th, and I just want to particularly, Emily, all the hard work that you've put into that. It's obvious, and I'm sure it's going to be a respectful and professional honoring of that traumatic event. Secondly, I'd like to thank VP Lynch. It just seems like yesterday when you came here, so wish you the best of luck in the future. I also want to note Interim President Woodworth. You know, the resolution says it all, and so I won't repeat that. Woodruff, I know. In any event, a personal thank you from myself, but more than all of your accomplishments, and you've had many, was the idea that we were able to get through a successful search, and I appreciate that, and I'm glad that you're staying with the university, and I wish you the best of luck. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Kelly. Trustee Byram.
Thank you. I also want to acknowledge the work of the student liaisons all year long, but in particular for the remembrance of February 13th, so I very much appreciate it. And to the faculty liaisons, thank you for rising up the inequities in funding. We've just begun the process of setting the budget, as Trustee Pierce had talked about, and it is going to take a collective effort because we didn't get in a situation of the disparities in funding overnight, and it's not going to be fixed overnight. But it is something that I think that we can come together as a Spartan community and start to make some progress on. So thank you very much for those comments. As Interim President Woodruff mentioned in her report, I'm thrilled about the university's continued efforts to make a difference in the communities we serve. As she highlighted the event that Governor Whitmer joined with Associate Dean for Public Health, Mona Hannah Atisha, on the RX Kids program that was on January 10th. It is truly one-of-a-kind program. It is the research that's going to come out of that. I'm very interested in seeing the results. And they're going to be having a kickoff launch. It's February 14th. It's in the evening, so I hope some of us will be able to attend. I know I'm planning to, and wear red that night in celebration of that. And I also want to give my appreciation to Interim President Teresa Woodruff, for you have gone above and beyond. And when you said, when we were speaking to you about taking the interim position, that you were all in for MSU. And you clearly have been all in. You were not a caretaker interim president by any stretch of the imagination. And you had challenges that no one could even envision at the time. And you rose to the occasion and you led the university with pride and with that Spartan spirit. I also want to acknowledge the first dude, as you call your husband, and I think he's the number one supporter, not only for Teresa Woodruff, but the university. And so Dr. Tom O'Halloran, I don't know if you're here today. Oh, well, everybody knows I'm near blind. So, but thank you very much. And I was glad I had a chance to go to Cowell's house last night and be able to say thank you. I believe it's there's just a few events left anyway. It's probably the last time I will be at Cowell's house when you and Dr. Woodruff have the interim presidency. And with Marlon Lynch, VP, I wish you well in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you for your service at Michigan State. And that will conclude my remarks for today. Go green.
All right. Thank you, Trustee Byram. Trustee Deno.
Hi, thank you. Sorry I am not there, although I assume everyone appreciates that I'm not there, so I'm not coughing all over everybody. Excuse me. I'd like to read a resolution of appreciation for Vice President and Chief Safety Officer Marlon Lynch. The Michigan State University Board of Trustees, extends its deepest appreciation to Vice President and Chief Safety Officer Marla Lynch for his unwavering dedication, extraordinary service, and invaluable contributions to MSU. Vice President Lynch has served the Spartan community with dedication since February 2021. Throughout his tenure, he has consistently demonstrated a commitment to enhancing the safety and well-being of the MSU community. Under Vice President Lynch's leadership, comprehensive safety measures have been prioritized, surpassing traditional law enforcement approaches and leading to significant improvements in campus safety across MSU campuses statewide. His instrumental role in spearheading initiatives such as expanding door locks, providing active violence training, establishing a security operations center, installing metal detectors and security video cameras on campus, and enhancing campus alert systems has increased the safety and security of our Spartan community. His innovative approach is evident in the implementation of the police social work program and the creation of the PEACE, P-E-A-C-E team, in partnership with the East Lansing Police Department, reflecting his commitment to addressing community concerns and promoting a proactive, community-based approach to policing. Additionally, Vice President Lynch has facilitated closer connections between the MSU Department of Police and Public Safety and the Spartan community by introducing community liaisons, enhancing communication and collaboration between these entities. His service to MSU is particularly noteworthy as he is an alumnus whose contributions have left an indelible mark on this institution. On behalf of the entire Spartan community, the Board of Trustees expresses its deepest gratitude to Vice President and Chief Safety Officer Marlon Lynch for his exceptional service and dedication. We celebrate his legacy of improved safety and leadership during his time at MSU. As he embarks on his next adventure as the Associate Vice Chancellor for the new Division of Public Safety at the University of Colorado, the trustees extend their heartfelt best wishes to Vice President Lynch. Thank you. And I can't really see what's going on, but if I can add a personal comment, if that's appropriate, or should I wait?
It is appropriate.
I just want to say to VP Lynch, I'm really sorry to see you leave. I've really appreciated our conversations and your honesty and your dedication to MSU. I've really appreciated that. I think this is a big loss for MSU. And the one thing I ask of you is when you go to Colorado and when you talk to the baseball fans there, please share your story of hanging out with Mr. October, Reggie Jackson, because it's a story that needs to be shared. But seriously, I really do appreciate you. You're a really great person. I'm going to miss you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Dano. Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
The beauty of not being the first trustee to give comments is that I can just amplify and echo the gratitude of that's been expressed by my colleagues. So I will join Vice Chair Kelly and Trustees Byram and Deno in expressing gratitude to our student leaders in how you are preparing the campus to approach February 13th, extending my gratitude to you, Marlon, for the work that you've done for our campus. And then especially to you, Interim President Woodruff, as you're leading our last meeting together, thank you for your leadership all along as Provost and also stepping into this role. We are so grateful for the service and time and effort that both you and Tom have devoted to this community and how you have prepared for our incoming President-elect to be successful. So thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Kennedy Jefferson. Trustee Pierce.
Okay, thank you, Stefan. Let me just start by recognizing the Career Services Network. Last week, they held an event. They hosted an event for engineering, diversity, and inclusion. And their whole aim is to make sure that we as a university, all of us, really stay committed to providing equal opportunities for everyone. Everyone welcome. And we want more STEM graduates that are diverse. And so I really appreciate their efforts. I also want to thank VP Lynch. I want to thank First Dude Tom, never heard that term, and President Woodruff for all that you've done in my tenure here, and your leadership is exemplary, so thank you. And then let me say to those of you that have spoken today, we do appreciate your comments, and one of our responsibilities as a Board of Trustees, and certainly me as the head of the Chair of the Budget and Finance Committee, is to look at the due diligence of our portfolios, and we will. We will. We'll look at it.
Do it with students in the room with you, is all I can say to that.
Further comments, Trustee Page?
That's it. Thank you.
Trustee Scott?
Thank you. Happy New Year to everyone, and happy Black History Month. I'm going to start off with my prepared statements. For the MSU Research Foundation, yesterday during our work session, we had an opportunity to engage with Dave Washburn, who gave an incredible presentation which offered an in-depth look into the MSU Research Foundation's roles and achievement. The MSU Research Foundation has been a crucial launchpad for numerous innovations embodying the spirit of ingenuity, reinforcing our university's commitment to innovative research and development. The Research Foundation's initiatives have significantly contributed to the university's global impact. These collaborative efforts have extended our reach and influence, further enhancing our role on the international stage. Dave provided an exciting overview of the process when the board approves licensing agreements, and it helped us to appreciate the journey from concept to the establishment of startup companies. An impressive milestone for the Research Foundation is its investment in over 150 active companies, which is just incredible if you think about it. This underscores the Foundation's commitment to nurturing and supporting entrepreneurial ventures. The ongoing work of the MSU Research Foundation is a source of excitement and anticipation. We eagerly look forward to discussing future collaborations and exploring new opportunities the Research Foundation will bring to our university. I also last month had the opportunity to virtually attend the annual Diversity Research Showcase, so thank you for allowing me to do that virtually because I was not able to get here physically. This event was a remarkable platform where our students presented their research. Their dedication to exploring and bringing awareness to a wide range of diversity issues was truly commendable. The topics covered a broad spectrum, including cultural, racial, ethnic, functional, gender, international, LGBTQ+, and political diversity topics. The showcase highlighted the importance of embracing diverse perspectives in our academic community. Recently, the NPHC, or the National Panhellenic Council, successfully conducted a blanket plus card-making event, and this initiative resulted in the donation of numerous blankets to Ellie's Place, a local organization dedicated to providing grief counseling to children. I actually have a niece who went to Ellie's Place when my brother passed away, and they helped her with grief counseling. It is a remarkable institution if you're not aware of it. So we appreciate that work. They made over 40 Valentine's Day cards, which were given to Origami Rehabilitation, a facility treating individuals with traumatic brain injuries. This outreach provided support and a message of hope and care to those undergoing rehabilitation. I would also like to recognize and congratulate Mark D'Antonio on his remarkable achievement of becoming the winningest coach in the history of Michigan State football, at least to date, because I am sure our new coach is going to look to surpass that. But he has rightfully earned a space in the College Hall of Fame. This induction is a testament to his exceptional coaching skills and dedication to the sport. This is a big milestone for our university's athletic history, so congratulations to Coach D'Antonio. And finally, I wanted to personally express my sincere appreciation to Dr. Woodruff for her exemplary leadership. Her contributions have also made a remarkable example of what great leadership is in times of adversity. And it's an acknowledgement that you are well... I'm not going to get emotional.
I feel that this acknowledgement is something that we as a board should give to you. You stepped in at a very trying time. And I'm a Rotarian. One of the mottos for Rotary is service above self. And I really thought about that when I think about you, because quite frankly, and I think people will be able to appreciate when I say this, you put aside your own personal ambitions for what was best for this university. And if we don't acknowledge that, we're just fooling ourselves. You absolutely did. And that sacrifice is not something that I do not appreciate, and I want to commend you on. This has not been easy for you, and yet you have maintained composure and dignity throughout this whole process. And I just want to tell you, you are someone I look up to, because quite frankly, you know me, I would have spoke out a lot if I were in your shoes. But you never did for the sake of this university. And I thank you for the support that you have provided to Dr. Gutsowitz as he comes in. Personally, and I hope I speak for most of us when I say that I hope we don't lose you. You are a remarkable person. Your research that you did even before you got here speaks for itself. But I know when you came in, there was a lot of concern that people had based on some things that had happened, and you came in and you showed everybody who you are and that DEI is important to you. You have made some significant strides here at the university level, and we are so appreciative of the things that you have done that will live on because you have established them since your time here. I think I can call you friend. I just want to thank you sincerely. I thank Tom for being your biggest cheerleader and supporter. I mean, you're everything a husband should be, standing by her side. And we're going to miss calling you first dude. I don't know if there's a first dude emeritus. I don't know. That's the title. But anyway, so I wanted to acknowledge you both. I'm just so sad to see Marlon leave. And I reached out to you, like, as soon as I heard. I mean, I am devastated. I'm not happy about it, but you got to do what you got to do for the best of your career. I understand. And I just wish you the best of luck. You are a Spartan alum, so you're always going to be a Spartan. Don't let Dion and all the buffs and all that stuff get to your head. Remember, you still bleed green, I believe. But we're going to miss you. Thank you for everything you've done, Marlon. You have really come in. There was a lot, and I think the trustees that were here at the time that you come in, know what I'm talking about, when there were a lot of issues going on, and you stepped in and you really just transformed public safety. The community relationships that you have, your reputation across the country precedes itself. So it definitely is, Trustee Deno said, it is our loss to lose you. But Colorado's gain. So I wish you the best of luck. And to your family as you leave. I would also like to, where are my notes? Oh, here we go. I also wanted to acknowledge those that spoke up on behalf of the unions. I think most of us up here, I'm looking at Trustee Kelly, most of us up here are pro-union, I would say. I love Trustee Kelly, and we want to see you all succeed. We want to see this established. We just want to make sure that people all feel that they've heard and that there's no confusion in this process. Someone had spoke out acknowledging that our interim provost came and spoke, and I appreciate the email that he sent out to give some clarification. That's all we ask for, I think, as a board, is that this process is a fair process and everyone understands it. So we will support you all. I don't think you're going to get any pushback, at least from seven of us, and go forth and conquer it in that. I'd also like to talk about those that have come forward with divestment. I am not a numbers person, and so I appreciate Trustee Pierce saying that this is something that they will look at.
I learn a lot from you all every time I come to a meeting. So we appreciate that you all have brought these things to our attention, and I will look to our Budget and Finance Committee and our Investment Advisory Committee. I think that would be dealing in taking a further look into that. I just wanted to let you know we hear you. And those that came up also from other or to speak on other issues that are close to your heart, we appreciate you all having the courage to come forward. I wanted to acknowledge Hannah because I think Hannah and I have bonded quite a bit over the time that she's been in her position. I didn't know that you considered yourself to be on the spectrum. The fact that you shared that, though, Hannah, you have done a remarkable job. You have, and I think Trustee Vassar had stated, you have brought humanity to that role. You have always been open to growing in your position. I think you have represented your constituency base very well. I'm going to hate to see you go, but hopefully I've got your number and you've got mine, so we'll continue to stay in contact. So thank you for everything you've done. I also wanted to acknowledge our other student liaisons for all of the sacrifice that you all have made. I am very happy that we are looking further into giving you all support, and so that the onus isn't just on you all for all that you are representing all of the students on campus, and that we are trying to come up with better ways in which to alleviate some of the burdens that you all have felt. Take care of your mental health. We want you all to be successful students, but not to leave here, you know, with a bad experience either because you've been so stressed out. So please take care of your mental health and know we're here to support you. I also want to acknowledge Trustee Tebe. I told her this last night, and I sincerely mean it, that I think you have done over and above what I did as this student liaison. You have really, to me, transformed what this committee does, and I appreciate you being willing to listen to some of my suggestions and the work that you've done. And I know that some have yelled that, you know, you had not met with them, but it's probably not have met with them yet because you have been very open to doing that. So I just want to acknowledge that you've tried to continue to maintain those close relationships and be a voice for our students as you always have since I've known you on this board. And I think I'm going to end with Black History Month. I said this last year. I'm going to say it again. Black History Month is American history. It's a time to celebrate the vast contributions that Black Americans have made throughout this country. Personally, I don't know why they gave us the shortest month of the year, because I feel like we've done so much to build this country on the backs of our ancestors. And so it's one of my favorite times of the year. I look forward to all of the things that we do at this university to celebrate Black history. And I hope that if you don't know much about it, that you'll look into learning more about what we have contributed as a race to this country and to the university. And that concludes my remarks. Oh, and also I look forward to also Dr. Lipton, the Miller Chevalier report, which hopefully will be out in another week or two. So I look forward to that as well. Thank you.
Thanks
concludes
my
remarks. I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
Thanks for always being transparent.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. Trustee Tebe.
Thank you. I just want to acknowledge that I do owe you a date, but I never said I wouldn't meet with you. So there has been an email exchange, and I do owe you some dates, but I'm not ignoring you. I do apologize for the delay in getting back to you. So just, it's not that I wasn't going to meet with you.
It's been over a week, though. So.
Yeah, I know. I'm not denying that I'm bad with email, okay? So I'm just saying I'm sorry, and I will get back to you. And never said I wouldn't meet with you. So just want to be clear on that. Yeah. But first I want to acknowledge President Woodruff. Thank you so much for everything that you have done at the university. I think you've set the bar very high for future presidents. And the partnership of Tom, that every time people were at your house, you acknowledged it was the people's house and you always had your doors open. I think that says a lot about who you are as a person. And Tom, to acknowledge all of the work that you do outside of supporting Teresa in your work in chemistry and with our graduate students. And so I really appreciate everything that you've done. In addition to supporting your wonderful wife. VP Lynch, all I have to say is I'm super bummed. Like, I don't have many words to say. I'm just, like, very bummed that you're leaving us, but congratulations, and I'm excited to see what you do in your future. So that's all.
Good.
Thank you, Trustee Tebay. Interim President Woodruff, that concludes trustee comments.
Thank you. Is there a motion to adjourn the meeting? Is there a second? All those in favor? The meeting is adjourned.